Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. The Cincinnati Reds evened up their series with the St. Louis Cardinals, winning 5-4 last night. Sal Stewart hit a three-run homer in the win. It was the rookie's 27th home run of the season, and he now has a league-leading 94 RBI. The Reds and Cardinals wrap up their five-game series this afternoon at 12:40. Brady Singer makes the start for the Reds opposite Michael McGreevy. Pre-game over on the Fan 2 begins at 12:10. The Cleveland Guardians wasted a brilliant pitching performance from Parker Messick, and they lose to the San Francisco Giants 1-0. The rubber matchup of the series this afternoon up in Cleveland at 1:10. Gavin Williams versus Landon Roop, the pitching matchup. A rough night on the pitch for the Columbus Crew as they lose to Montreal 2-1 over at Scott's Miracle-Gro Field. This one's sponsored by BMI Federal Credit Union. Open a savings account for the youth in your life with just $5 at BMI, and they'll put $100 into a youth certificate.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Tom Tiberi here.
Oh, Reese came in, and he's handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me.
Oh,
I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Thursday edition of the program. Both the boys with you for the next three. Isaiah and Faris. Bake is here. And we're pretty loaded up, kids. 9:30, big day up in Berea for the two quarterbacks. Josh Allen and the Buffalo Bills will be in town for joint practices. If you're curious who is going to start week one, I think you're going to get a telltale sign of that today. Todd Monken is going to split the reps evenly, but of course, coach's prerogative. He can change that, and we'll see where all of that goes today based on how those two guys play up there. 10 o'clock, we open up the mailbag, another robust mailbag out of you guys. We get to that coming up at 10 o'clock. 10:30, Mr. Feinbaum drops by as is customary on a Thursday, and then in the 11 o'clock hour, we close out the NFC South in 2-a-days, so we will do the Carolina Panthers, my arch nemesis, and we will also do the Atlanta Falcons, where Kevin Stefanski, former Browns coach, is now coaching. So you have that to look forward to, which is very, very nice. I mentioned this, I think, a couple times this week that I kind of dip my toe in the NCAA college football game. Usually play two seasons. I play one right when it drops, and I play just offensive sets and kind of zip through it pretty quickly. It takes, honestly, it's 10 to 15 minutes a game when you play that way, and you can go through a season, well, like I did, in about a week if you have a little bit of time. So I played through an Ohio State season last night. We did lose the Texas game. We won everything else. The playoff was absurd. We played Memphis in the semifinal. Memphis upset Georgia in a quarterfinal. So it was Ohio State and Memphis in one half, and it was South Carolina and LSU in the other side of it. Virginia won the ACC, ended up winning the national title, actually played Indiana in the Rose Bowl in the quarterfinal. So that was the matchup. So we got to put out the Cignettis twice, once in the regular season, then once in the Rose Bowl. So why am I talking about this video game? Well, I'll tell you why I'm talking about the video game. Well, first of all, as a quick aside, so we get to the offseason is pretty complicated. You have to re-sign your guys' NIL. So you got to go to your roster, and there are all of these guys on your roster who are thinking about leaving, and you have to decide if you want to up their NIL or not, and if there's somebody that you want in the program. So you have to go through everybody, and there's guys who want more money. I'm guessing it's very realistic. Like, you have a certain amount of money that you can spend, and you've spent it in your recruiting class. You can spend it in the transfer portal, and you can spend it to retain your guys. So, like, you're going through, and you have a finite amount of money, and you're like, well, boy, Isaiah West, who we're going to hear from in 15 minutes, he didn't like his playing time last year, and so he wants out.
or a lot more money. And so you have to deal with that with Isaiah. You got to have a sit down with him and talk to him. Julian went pro. He was a second round pick. Obviously, Jeremiah went pro. So Tavian St. Clair, are you ready to be the quarterback? Well, there's some quarterbacks in the transfer portal. Drew Mastemaker was the number one quarterback in the transfer portal, and he ended up going to Georgia. But I thought, gosh, do I dip my toe in those waters or do I go with the guys I got? So these are the questions that you answer. And these are probably very similar to the ones that Ryan Day and Mark Pantone has to answer at Ohio State. But this is the reason that I'm talking about all of this. So you get to the end and it says conference expansion. So you've done your recruiting, you've done your transfer portaling, you've retained your players, and then you get to a point in the offseason after you see what they did with Body by Mick. Some of them improved dramatically, some of them didn't. You get through all of that, and then comes this screen and it says conference expansion. And so it pops up and I go, oh, what can I do here? How much fun can we have here? Now the boys are all in. Beamsy's yelling at me. Don't pay the 5 stars, Dad. They'll just leave you. They'll leave you and they'll never develop. Just leave. Just go to the portal. He's telling me all these things I got to do. I'm like, okay, but I think the roster is going to be fine. I think we're pretty loaded up. We're going to be fine. I think the question now is, though, this is my one chance to be football God. And I can now add to the Big Ten whomever I want, and I can get teams out of here, whichever teams I want, because you can exchange them. So the first thing I do is I add Notre Dame. All right, so now we got 19 teams in the league. That makes sense. I've been a proponent of the Big Ten playing hardball with the Irish for a long time and just saying, look, if you're not going to play our teams, then we don't want to play you. Kind of that simple. And I think if the Big Ten actually did that, Notre Dame wouldn't have much choice, because I don't think their alumni base wants to play a steady diet of ACC teams over and over again in the service academies. So I grab the Irish. So then I'm like, well, I need 20. Right now I'm at 19. I need 20. So I'm looking around. I'm thinking, well, what about Miami out of the ACC? I know that the Big Ten wants North Carolina. Do you add North Carolina? Do you go into the Big East? Like, what do you do? But the problem is, when you bring one on, you have to trade one out. So they don't let you just add them. You have to add one and then you lose one. So, well, that's easy. Let's add Carolina, get rid of Rutgers. Like, we'll do these type of things. And at one point I said, I want the beloved ponies in here. And Beamsy goes, Dad, you're being ridiculous. I go, this is college sports, right? Why can't we do these things? Then he's yelling at me because I want to add Miami. The Big Ten shouldn't be in the South. And I'm like, well, you're right. They probably shouldn't. So I said, okay, blanket. Let's just roll with just Notre Dame. Let's go to 19 teams. We'll roll with Notre Dame and we'll work itself out. Okay, fine. So we add the Irish and we hit go. We get to the schedule for the next year. Guess who's not on the schedule for the 2027 season with the addition of Notre Dame? Little team called Michigan. Off the schedule. Off the schedule. So the last game for the 2027 Buckeyes is USC, and Michigan's off the schedule. So why did we talk about all of this? Well, it's a video game. It's a silly thing. Obviously, that would never happen. But it did, to me, point out an example of about a million different unintended consequences that came from a lack of leadership in college athletics over the last decade plus. And the unintended consequences, we are just beginning to sow the oats on these. There's a ruling that happened yesterday that we're going to get to in a second. That is, if I told you 10 years ago, this is what's happening, you would have said there is no chance that's happening. And so while it is a video game and it seems silly that you add Notre Dame and you're not playing Michigan, how close are we? What is still sacred in this sport? I mean, I understand why he did it, but senior day is not senior day anymore. And it makes some sense, right? Like, you may play another game at the shoe. You got fifth-year guys, 5 years to play five. You got guys who have been here for 6 months being honored as much as guys who have been here 4 years. Like, I understand the thinking behind it, but like, that's gone away. When we have had people in power say, maybe we ought to move the Ohio State Michigan game. Maybe you ought to play it at the middle of the season. Maybe, because you don't want to play them twice back to back and all of these things. It's an illustration to show how what could happen. I'm not saying this one's particularly likely, but it is an example, a microcosm of what has happened in the sport over the last decade plus. And there are a million unintended consequences of things that have happened that nobody saw coming. And perhaps we all should have. Perhaps we all should have. For God's sakes, Cal and Stanford are in the ACC. Like, what are we doing? None of this makes any damn sense.
And, Bo, I believe it's something that I've kind of talked about a little bit for a while, and how the path we're heading, I just want it to crash and burn.
Yeah, me
like
too.
Everybody wanted this. You wanted to go play by your own rules. You wanted to do all of this stuff. You wanted to pay everyone. You wanted all of this stuff in there. You wanted, you've asked for all of it. I want it to crash and burn, because I feel like that's the only way you can fix it, maybe, and put some rules and regulations in place outside of somebody gambling on the sport. Because when somebody gambles on the sport, everybody pulls together and says, uh-uh, we ain't doing this.
Not having that.
But everything else, hey, we could win. Let's go for it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, too, Bo, you talked about senior day and how, like, logistically, you know, it might make sense to move it to the beginning of the season. And it feels like with college football, we went from keeping everything sacred and everything tradition for the longest time. And then once we started to tweak a couple things, it was like, well, if it makes sense to do it this way, shouldn't we just do it this way rather than sometimes preserving tradition? Like, you sometimes have those conversations of like, well, it makes sense to do this. And you're like, but that's just not the way that we've ever done it. So we probably should keep it the way it is to preserve the history. It might make more sense that way, or it might make us a little bit more money that way. But this is kind of how we've always done it, and this is what everybody already loves. So maybe we keep it that way. But now, since we started to make the little tweaks, now it's just piled on where it's like, ah, well, why don't we just completely make this logistically making sense and making as much money as possible and completely throwing the tradition out the window?
There's a, I want to say it's like a Looney Tunes scene. And in my head, it's either Porky Pig or Yosemite Sam or, you know, one of those antagonists. And there is a hole in a wooden dam, and he puts a finger in the hole, and then another hole opens, and then another one opens, and another one opens, and another one. And eventually, he doesn't have enough appendages to plug all of the holes. That's college athletics right now. That's what it is. They think that they can plug one and six more pop open. And what happened yesterday is the latest example of the bat blank crazy world we are in. A guy I interviewed as a Cleveland Brown entered the transfer portal yesterday. We'll get you the details on that coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Play this summer takes you back to some of the greatest comebacks in Ohio State football history.
A JT Barrett comeback special. It's Ohio State and Penn State from 2017.
Hear Buckeye replay this Saturday at 4 p.m. on The Fan.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the afternoon, some breaks in the clouds, maybe an isolated shower or two that tries to pop off again. Highs in the upper 70s, but still watch out for leftover trouble spots from the heaviest stuff that fell earlier in the morning. Areas of fog possible early on Friday, mostly sunny otherwise with highs around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. When General Sherman marched through Georgia, he was listening to this show.
Use your skills for good, young warrior.
This is Bishop and Friends.
So, this summer, he was signed as an undrafted free agent. There was a running back out of SMU most recently, but previous to that, UCLA named TJ Harden. Played four seasons of college football, did not redshirt, played straight through three seasons at UCLA, and then last year at SMU, ran for 787 yards, was the leading rusher for the Ponies last year in the season. So he was a free agent, undrafted free agent that the Browns signed and worked into camp, and we talked to him. Yesterday, TJ and a host of others entered the transfer portal. You say, well, what do you mean? He's an NFL player. He entered the transfer portal. Yeah, that's right. And he's not alone. Former Ole Miss starters, Daquan Wright, Xavien Harris, and Wydette Williams, all who signed with NFL teams this summer, are among a group of athletes who were granted a temporary restraining order on Wednesday to return to college for one more season. Did you hear that? These are on NFL rosters. They're not alone. Others that have joined them, including former Oregon State running back Anthony Hankerson, who has been listed on NFL rosters. There's a handful. There's dozens of them. Former South Carolina player, DQ Smith, LSU linebacker, Jack Pyburn, James Madison linebacker, Trent Hedrick, Notre Dame defensive lineman. There's a dozen of them or more, and there'll probably be more. These are guys on NFL rosters, training camp rosters, who are now, because of this injunction, have been granted eligibility to play college football this season. They're good to go. So if you have the roster space and the finances, you can now go get a grown man who is playing National Football League, has been in rooms, has been in buildings, has been through an NFL offseason program in many instances. You can now sign them to play college football this season. Now, the NCAA will fight this. They will try to get a stay in the injunction and it'll go to court. And it will be like 1,000 other court cases that the NCAA loses. And to Baker's earlier point, unless it's gambling related, they lose. That's the only thing that they can get to hold up on. Everything else, they lose over and over and over again. So you're going to live in a world where you're going to have eligibility for one more year because of this 5-5 thing where these guys can all play another year of college football. Now, the NCAA is going to try to stop it. But this goes back to what I was talking about in the first segment. This is one of the massive unintended consequences of this. Nobody saw this coming. Nobody thought anyone would do something like this. But nobody also probably thought that you'd have a 5-for-5 rule. So all of these things, every time you have an action, there is a reaction that it feels to me like nobody with any sort of leadership or understanding of college athletics, people in power, these unintended consequences, they just get hit over the head with them. Absolutely bombed.
And Bo, I don't, with the Sorsby stuff, the NCAA didn't win in court.
No,
the NCAA won because they stood up and said, we're not allowing this. We're just not going to play you guys. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. And then they were like, well, we're going to drop this. It's not worth it.
The NCAA, they won. And also because the NFL came and saved them, which made it enforceable. Because the NFL said we're not going to put him in the supplemental draft, which then made at least the punishment enforceable. So that was the other thing that they needed, that is they needed there to be consequences from the NFL perspective so that this wasn't something that could just skate. You're exactly right on the NCAA side, but the NCAA didn't save him. A bunch of people rose up within the conference and say, well, we're not playing him.
And this is what I've said all along. Reese always said all of these rules and stuff would have to come from the coaches. But the coaches are going to do whatever they can to win. Like if the NCAA institutions would step up and say no, like if somebody at one of these schools, a president or someone, an athletic director would say, no, we are not putting that kid on our roster.
Yeah.
But they won't do that because they all want to win at all cost.
Yeah.
They have no morals. They don't care. And I think this is really simple. All you have to do is say, and if these guys went to camp, Bo, they got paid, correct? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You have to say is if you got paid by a professional team, you're out. You have no more eligibility. That's pretty easy, right?
Well, here's where they'll lose, though. And this goes back to, the simple reality is just do that with a normal student. So let's say you're in business school at Ohio State. And Merrill Lynch hires you while you're in school and you're on an academic scholarship at Ohio State, or even if you're not, Ohio State's not kicking you out of the business school because you got a job, right? And so
you're not
I understand it's different, but that's why they lose.
You're not wrong, but
they're obtuse when it comes to calling it what it is. Make them pros. Do CBA, collectively bargain. Now you have contracts. Now you have rules. Now you have enforceability. As long as you insist on acting as if they are just students, as long as you do that, then every sort of litigation that you go up against has to be taken from that perspective of, can a normal student do this? And if a normal student can do it, then how the hell are you going to prevent a student athlete from doing it? Because that's all they are, right, Bake? They're just students who just happen to play athletics.
Then again, somebody, the presidents of these schools need to stand up and just say, no, we're not letting you do it.
Like, yeah, you're right.
It may be legal and you may be allowed to do it, but we are not letting our athletic programs do this.
You're exactly right, because if you do that, if they all banded together and do that, what that would do is that would be just like you saying when a kid applies to business school, yeah, we're not accepting you. Not everybody has a right to get accepted to every college they want to get to. You have to be accepted. So you're right. If they actually banded together and for once did what was right for the sport long term instead of being so damn greedy on all of it, if they would do that, they'd have a chance. But they all have to band together, and the reality is they never would.
The other thing I think more regular students, if we're going to put, and we do this, and it's not necessarily wrong, but the other thing we need to do then, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this, regular students don't get the benefit of working out with Mick Baratti. They don't get the benefit of the nutrition and the food that the Ohio State play. Regular students need to go get that then. They need to start showing up at practice and saying, hey, I want to work with this nutritionalist. I want to work with this strength. You know, the regular students don't get a lot of things that D1 athletes get. So no. They need to start. If we're going to do it one way, let's do it the other way. And let's see how quick this all stops.
Because it's just not. I don't. And the head in the sand thing is so, it's so true because I just hate pretending that this is not pro sports. Like the college football players that are playing right now, like we're so far past the student athlete thing. It just feels so far away. Like we're at the point now where you can stay playing college football for 5 years. Like there's guys that are 25, 26 years old that are still claiming to be a student athlete. Like at this point, you're not a student athlete anymore. You're just a semi-pro player that's hanging around as long as you can to make money, which is fine. And everybody wants them. We're not saying they shouldn't get paid. We're saying there should be parameters to what's going on. And the NFL teams should be upset if these players go back because they spent time and resources, what? Scouting these guys, training these guys, for them to say, actually, no, we're good. I'm going to go back to college and see if I can make some money there because I think that situation's a little bit better for me. Like that feels
it's more
crazy.
Lucrative.
Yeah.
It's more lucrative. Like this Jack Pyburn kid from LSU, he's going to get paid. These Ole Miss, these are Ole Miss starters, guys. They're going to get paid.
Bo,
in a big, big way.
Did I see this one that's an Ole Miss play, Daquan Wright? The Browns signed him, but he never showed up because of this?
I remember reading that name.
I'm pretty sure they signed him last week or 5 days ago, yeah. And he has not shown up. He's never reported.
Yeah, yeah, because this is hanging over all of it. You know, I don't know, guys. I don't know when anyone's going to wake up. I don't know what is going to be the breaking point on all this. I don't know how absurd all of this has to get before somebody pushes back and says with a real plan. I don't know when that's going to be, but this is one of the bigger unintended consequences we've seen.
I also
this is nuts.
I also hate like we're in a world where we can exploit the letter of the law rather than the intent of the law. You know what I mean?
Oh,
and
yeah,
I get it. I get the era we're in where any kind of loophole, any kind of advantage, but there's a lot of things that were done for certain reasons, but then we take it to, well, it's the extreme. I just hate that we live in a world
like that. We take it to
like
the literal
that.
Level.
Yes.
Yeah, as opposed to the, yeah. You mentioned, they haven't been real student. Wasn't it Carson Beck in advance of the national championship last year who said he hadn't been to school in like 2 years? Because he graduated from Georgia like 3 years ago?
Yes, I remember
says
that.
He hasn't been to class in like 2 years? Hasn't been to a class in 2 years? And that's not a red flag?
I believe.
Like, don't you have to be attending?
Wasn't he
like,
saying
we talked
he was
about
doing
this.
Online, though?
No, I don't know. But I mean, he said he graduated like 3 years ago. He goes, I don't know. I graduated 3 years ago. Like, was he doing online? Who knows? I mean, Justin Field said, you know, he never actually went to class at Ohio State. Everything was online. But, like, where's the academic component in all of this?
It's gone.
It's gone. Of course it's
gone. For all of college football, the academic is so pushed down. Like, yet again, it's another thing that, like, we try to act like is a serious thing that everybody's going to class and doing their work and they're chasing a degree, which some guys are. But then you get to the point where, I mean, there's guys that aren't, and that's fine. Yet again, they have different aspirations, but you're not living the same lifestyle that most kids who go to college are living. It's not even close.
Nope. Sark said his kids are going to class.
Some probably do. I know some do. I'm sure there's a lot of kids that do. You know, 105,000 people don't watch a science exam though either. So like that's the thing that's never made sense of it. So just call it what it is and then you got a chance to rule it. It's kind of that simple. The NFL is a pretty straightforward business. The best play. It's kind of that simple. To that end, a big day up in Berea today. Deshaun and Shador take center stage as the Bills are in town for a joint practice where all eyes will be on the two quarterbacks. Todd Monken's plan for the quarterbacks and their thoughts on a big day tomorrow coming in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller. Your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
Slope and Juice.
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
Well, here's what's up on a Thursday edition of the program. I can't believe we're already here. I remember saying this in July when we first were having these conversations about the Browns quarterback competition between Deshaun Watson and Shador Sanders, that the day that you're going to want to be paying attention to is Thursday, August 20th. That is today. We've reached that point. It's when the Buffalo Bills will be up in Berea with the Browns for joint practices. You will get ones versus ones. So the way that this works in the joint practice I've been through before, on one field, it will be the Browns defense against the Buffalo Bills offense led by Josh Allen, ones versus ones. On the other field, there will be ones versus ones, the Browns one offense against the Bills one defense. So that's the way that it will go, and then they will shift in the twos from each side. Offense on one side, defense on the other is the way that this thing will work. All eyes will obviously be on the ones. I had said in July, until I heard what I'm about to play for you, that the rep count here will be the one that really matters. This is the one that you're going to want to pay attention to in terms of what Todd Monken does here with the quarterbacks will give you an idea of what he's thinking big picture. Here is Monk on splitting up the quarterback reps during the joint practice.
Everybody used the word even or equal or fair. The reality is that each block's a little bit different. Rundowns, pass downs, pass skelly, and red zone. So they're each going to get five and five with the ones. And so they're all going to get it. But like I said, what plays they get, I really don't have time to look at exactly what the plays are. I mean, you got to be able to go do it. But I'm excited to see them play.
Yeah, for the two quarterbacks, I think it's a massive day. Yesterday they were in shorts. It was a Shador day with the ones and then a Watson day with the twos. So it was fine. But it's clear that they need to play somebody else at this point, and that saying, oh my God, that rep on the 17th day of practice is going to be the differentiator. Like, they've got 6 months of differentiators they've been working on. They've got a lot of data points here. It's not something that's going to turn in one practice. I think what they're looking for today is if one of these guys has a day in a practice against the Bills, potentially those things could change. Both quarterbacks were available yesterday. Here is Deshaun Watson and where he's at with the quarterback competition.
No, I mean, every opportunity for me, I just want to go out there and prove that I'm capable of being a starter. But as far as just nailing it and trying to, you know, my main focus is just trying to improve. You know, I'm not really focused on just the competition. You know, I think the front office and Coach Monken is going to make that decision based on how they're going to make that decision. You know, so, you know, I can't really control that as far as what they want to go with, but I can control my opportunities and my reps that I get and being successful with that.
Let's get this out of the way. So a lot of attention has been given to, he was asked about fans' reaction in the home game on Saturday, if indeed he plays the third quarter, and potentially if he is the starter, what would it essentially be the third game of the season? Because they go at Jacksonville, at Tampa before the home opener in week three. So Watson was asked, are you worried about a fan reaction at home? Here was his answer.
And what about the reaction, and have you thought about any type of reaction that you might get at the stadium on Saturday? Are you prepared for whatever might come?
I don't care.
So he's getting a lot of attention for that. What do you want him to say? Like, what's the right answer?
He shouldn't care, right?
He can't.
It's not his job to care what the fans think. It's his job to go play football, and it's good to play football as good as he can.
I don't know what people would want him. He's getting a lot of flack for it, and I don't understand it. I don't understand what answer would you want him to say? I'm sure I'll get booed, and it's going to really hurt me, my feelings, and it's going to break me. Like, would that suffice? Is that what you want? Is that what you want on that? What would be the answer that would make you, that would, you'd say, okay, he nailed that answer. What would be the answer?
Because every response online says, oh, he totally cares. Well, do you want him to say, oh, I'll be crushed on Saturday?
Right. I don't understand it.
I'll say this, like if he said something about if he got a negative reaction, it would hurt him, combined with his comments on, you know, there's no way I can be the player I was before. That's not exactly what he said, but
yeah, that's,
I'm paraphrasing or whatever. That I'd be super concerned about this dude and where his head was.
Yeah, I think so. And so to me, I just don't understand what answer you'd want him to give there that would be like a cosign. Yeah, that's a great answer. Like, you, of course you can't be concerned about that. He's trying to win a job. Shedeur Sanders is trying to win a job too. And he was asked about the importance of Saturday's game for him in addition to Thursday's reps that he'll get today. Here's Shedeur.
I'll say every day of my life's important. Every day is important. I wouldn't say it's a day that's not important. So that's just another day going out there doing what I got to do, honestly. I don't really feel anxiety or any pressure, you know, going into things like that anymore, because it's like, that's how I approach everything. So, you know, it's just another day of going to work, you know. That's all it is for me.
I don't believe that either. Here's the thing that I think this is just this simple, guys. As I've said many times, if it's close, then you go with Shedeur, because he's a fifth-round pick under team control for a very long time at a very easy salary, and you can build around it. If it's close, you go with Shedeur. The only way that I think it can be Watson is if it's not particularly close and hasn't been particularly close, and that his ceiling is higher for this offense than it is for Shedeur. And these are clean slates for both of them. Todd Monken did not draft either one of these players. He did not sign either one of these players. He was paratrooped into this situation, and I'm telling you, absolutely factually, all Todd Monken cares about is winning football games. This is a 60-year-old man who waited a long time to coach in the National Football League to be one of 32. This is a dream come true for him to be an NFL head coach. If you think for a second he is not going to do everything to win football games, then you just don't get how the sport is played. You don't get competitors. You don't understand Monken at all. That is not how he's wired. So whoever he picks, he believes that's his best chance to win. Period. And I'm telling you this 100%, this is entirely Todd Monken's decision. Entirely where this goes. There's nothing else. There's no Geppetto strings. It doesn't exist. This is Monk's decision on who he wants to play at quarterback. It's that simple. And I do think today will go a long way, because the decision that he's making to me comes, and this part's to me, in my opinion, from what I've seen, and I've seen 14 training camp practices with these two guys, will it be easier for Todd Monken to get Deshaun Watson to let it loose and rip it and trust what he sees and drive the ball down the field, because operationally he's an A+. Underneath stuff, quick game, A+. Or is it easier to get Shedeur operationally, quick game, get all of that stuff in order? Which of those is harder, and which has the higher ceiling? To me, that's Todd Monken's decision right there. That's the root of it.
So a couple things here, Bo. I do think Shedeur, when he says that, I think that's probably pretty true. I don't think he's bothered by anything. His dad didn't really seem to be bothered by much when he was a player, and he did his things his own way. Mm-hmm. I think Shador's kind of the same way. I think Shador's water off a duck's back. I don't think anything really bothers him. You talk about Todd Monken, and all he wants to do is win games. I think that's why this is going to go down to the wire, and he is going to pick, even if it's 51-49, he's going to pick the person that's 51. Because that's all he knows, is whoever's the best is going to be out there and they're going to play. Mm-hmm. So your thing about if it's close, organizationally, is probably right. But Todd Monken's not thinking that way. He's like, whoever is going to give me the best chance to win games. I also think with Shedeur, there are warts there, but I don't think you want to coach the playmaking ability out of him. Like the greats, there were times when, and I'm not comparing Shedeur to Brett Favre, but there were times Brett Favre made the craziest throw you've ever think, and you're like, why in the hell would he do that?
Yeah.
But it's because he had supreme confidence in his arm and his ability, and there were also times where he made that same throw, and it got through, and it was a touchdown, and you were like, that's one of the greatest things I've ever seen.
Right.
And that's one of the hard things, too, is when you have players like that that are playmakers, risk takers, those guys are tough to watch at practice. Because a lot of times you're like, can I trust this guy? How much, especially for Todd Monken, he's putting in there who he feels like he can trust to get them to 9 or 10 wins, whether Browns fans believe they can get there or not, because he has to think that way. And seeing Shador practice make questionable throws over and over again, he's like, what is this going to turn into in the game? Whereas for Deshaun, like we saw on the first preseason game, he played it safe. But if you're a first-time head coach, like, which way do you lean off that? Do you want the potential of Shador that might turn into a dumpster fire if he's turning the ball over like crazy, or hoping that your scheme can get you through wins and your defense can play good enough if Deshaun is super conservative? It's a hard decision for Monken.
It is. And I do think that today will go a long way in what that decision is. I think he wants to see it. I know he wants to see it. I want to see it. I want to see what this looks like against somebody else, and I want to see what it looks like against a number one defense, and I want to see what the Browns defense, quite honestly, looks like against Josh Allen, because that's a hell of a test. We'll get into the world of sports last night coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
And have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's The Fan Call-In Show, presented by The Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
The Fan Poll is sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub, home of award-winning pizza and $2 tall boys. All day, every day.
With friends like these, who needs former college football players? This is Bishop and Friends.
And we are proudly and always brought to you by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 80 years. I tell you what, I'm beyond just seeing how the Browns quarterbacks look today up in Berea, I'm also excited to see Josh Allen. It's been a while. The last time I went to, I was thinking about this yesterday. When is the last time that I went to a practice, an NFL practice with a quarterback who just didn't miss ever? And the answer to that was Carson Palmer with the Bengals. So I would say this would have been like probably 20 years ago, probably like fall of 07. Bengals camp was down in Kentucky. I want to say, was it Covington? It was in Kentucky somewhere. I remember going down to Kentucky to cover it. And they were in dorms. And Ocho Cinco was there. And Carson was there. And I remember watching, because up until that point, in terms of watching a practice, I'd only seen college teams practice. I'd only seen Florida State practice. I'd only seen Ohio State practice very little. But in terms of like really seeing a practice, mostly just Florida State practice at that point. And I remember thinking, watching Carson Palmer just go through like team, that not only did the ball never touch the ground, the ball never was anywhere other than exactly where it should have been. Every single throw, like that level of perfection, even amongst greats, stands out. So I'm curious to see how Allen goes about his business today up in Cleveland. Of course, it's a huge sliding doors moment. It was between him and Baker Mayfield for John Dorsey when he made the selection at number one overall. And listen, I've often said, I don't know if Josh Allen becomes Josh Allen if he's drafted into the Hugh Jackson situation that year, if he's able to overcome that that way. Josh Allen was certainly, his career has been curated expertly by Buffalo. He's the rare example of someone who has actually become accurate. There aren't many. Usually you're accurate or you're not, and you live with the inaccuracies. He wasn't accurate in college. He wasn't particularly accurate early in his NFL career, but he's become accurate. Like, he's put in the work, and now he's kind of a co-face of the league guy. So I'm very curious to see what he looks like against that Browns defense, just to see that level of excellence at the position.
Does he have the most pressure of anybody on the NFL, coaches, owners, general managers, players? Is he number one on the list of most pressure on his shoulders?
He is. Him and Lamar would be second, but I think that those are 1 and 1A for most pressure. And I think the reason for those being 1 and 1A is there is no longer Sean McDermott in Buffalo, There is no longer John Harbaugh in Baltimore. So in both instances, those two guys, we assume, got the guys they wanted to be their head coach. And that doesn't necessarily mean that Josh Allen had a problem with Sean McDermott. I don't know if he did or not. But the guy that they hired is a guy that Josh wanted in Joe Brady. And so the same I would assume is true in Baltimore. That with Harbaugh gone, the guy that they hired is who Lamar wanted. So I think it's those two for sure. And we want to keep calling them. There was somebody that just had this last week, Bake. I can't remember. Was it Bill Connolly? Somebody had Josh Allen as the quarterback of the 2020s team right now. Like he was the quarterback on the 2020s team. And I just went, well, wait, what? Don't you? I mean, you have to play in a Super Bowl to do that. You don't just get to be that if you've never even played in a Super Bowl. Like he's got to do that first, doesn't he?
I would think, especially when you have guys out there like Patrick Mahomes, Jalen Hurts, even.
Right.
I mean, hell, Drake May did it in his second year.
Right. Yeah. And Burrow's at least been to one.
I do think it's interesting, and I think people are starting to, but it does seem like Josh Allen has gotten a pass much more than some other quarterbacks would have or have in the past for having such a good team and being so close a lot and not winning. I think that's slowly starting to change for him, though.
Well, this past season felt like the one when you have the Broncos without Bo Nix in the AFC Championship and then Drake May in his second year with the Patriots, no Patrick Mahomes in the playoffs, no Joe Burrow in the playoffs. It felt like last year was the year where I was like, Josh, if you're going to put it on your back here, maybe this is the season to do it. But then the point that Bo made on once your head coach leaves, then the pressure's on you. And that's why now, when we talk about the Bengals, we're talking a lot about Zach Taylor. If the Bengals underperform this year and Zach Taylor's gone, next year we're not talking about the coach. We're talking about Joey B.
Yep, 1,000%.
That's when it shifts. Who did the Bills lose to last year in the playoffs?
They beat the Jags, right?
Yeah, I think it was the Broncos, right?
No, the Broncos. Yeah, you're right. The Broncos beat them in overtime.
Because they had the catch. Oh, I remember it now. It came down to the wire. I think it went to overtime.
It did. Yeah, it went to overtime. They lost in overtime to the Broncos. I mean, that can't happen. That can't happen if you're Josh Allen. It can't. I saw that the Cavaliers did a deal yesterday with like six teams involved. I have no idea if this means anything. I don't. My hunch is it doesn't put them over any sort of benchmark or make them more. Does it? I don't follow close enough. I have no idea if my hunch is this doesn't make them a team to beat in the East.
Not a team to beat in the East, but I think it's a good move for them. Peyton Watson, 23-year-old, lengthy, kind of 3-and-D guy, gives you a lot more ceiling than Max Strus did. Strus, I love Strus. He played great in the playoffs. Definitely a hustle guy, but there's a ceiling on Strus on what he can do defensively. He plays a lot bigger than he is. Peyton Watson is 6'8". He's an actual wing. Has a lot of potential, so they kind of sold out on Strus for possibly a longer-term defensive lengthier guy that they're trying to hopefully get some potential out of. He'll be in the starting five next year. He'll be their starting wing.
And it seems like James Harden kind of took less all summer to make this type of thing happen. Obviously it was intended to be for LeBron, but then this was kind of their plan B on it. So, I mean, give this credit to Dan Gilbert and the folks up there. It's never going to be for lack of effort. Like they're never going to sit on their hands. The Cavaliers are never going to have, for example, like a summer like the Blue Jackets have had. Like they don't do that. Like they're aggressive. They sign, they try. And he's been really one of the better owners, in Ohio professional sports for 20 years or so now. Second hour of the program coming up next. Paul Feinbaum coming up at 10:30. We open up the mailbag first. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good Good morning, I'm Ryan Baker. Reds rookie Sal Stewart is having one heck of a first year in the bigs. He clubbed a three-run home run, his 27th of the season, to help Cincinnati top the St. Louis Cardinals 5-4 last night. His 94 RBIs, the most in Major League Baseball this season. The Reds and Cardinals wrap their five-game series this afternoon at 12:40. Brady Singer gets the ball for the Reds opposite Michael McGreevy. Pre-game coverage over on the Fan 2 begins at 12:10. Parker Messick sure deserved better yesterday for the Guardians. He throws 6 2/3 of one-run baseball, striking out 10, but Cleveland loses to the San Francisco Giants 1-0. The rubber matchup of that series this afternoon in Cleveland at 1:10, Gavin Williams versus Landon Roop. This one's sponsored by TurboTrack Realty. Done with that property? Call John Kozik at TurboTrack Realty. He'll buy it for cash today, 614-470-2000.
Taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour here on a Thursday edition of the program. Mr. Feinbaum coming up in 29 minutes from now. Time now, though, to open up that mailbag. Hit it, fellas.
Our comment box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. You've got to get it out. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. Again.
Bishop and Friends present Emails.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Get 50% off all window styles plus no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com.
All right, let's open up that mailbag. Let's start with this one from Barry, who writes, probably turn the bed down just a little. There we go. This one from Barry. I'd want him to, this is in regard to Watson. The subject matter is just Watson. I'd want him to say he's going to be going back to Cleveland 2-0 and the fans will be happy. If he said that, what would the reaction be? So he's already the starter. This whole competition is a sham. So you think that we're going to forget everything just because you win? Like, Barry, I understand what you're coming from, and I think that's kind of what most are thinking, that the reality is that as sports fans, we're pretty fickle, and if our guys play good, we can forgive a lot. And I think that that's probably what the root of what you're saying is probably accurate. That if the Browns are 2-0 coming back home and he plays well, if he is indeed the starter, that he will be cheered. That there's no question that that's the case. I mean, I've been there. I was there when LeBron James played his last game for the Cleveland Cavaliers the first time around. I was there the first time he came back with the Miami Heat, and I was fearful for his safety. It was that much vitriol in the building when he returned the first time. And I was there when they debuted his return against the Celtics his first time back as a Cav, and the place, it was like he never left. I'm not suggesting or drawing a parallel between the off stuff with Deshaun and I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is sports fans are fickle, and if you have success, they will support you. So if that's what you're saying, then I think that there's a decent chance that some of that is true. But I think if he said that yesterday, I think that there would have been red flags everywhere.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Bo, a lot of times that winning cures everything. But there's some people that already have their mind made up about Deshaun Watson, regardless, whether that be off the field or just the fact that the Browns got fleeced in this trade so far and they spent all this money on someone who really hasn't played for them or gotten any results for them. So it may change a little bit, but there's some people that are going to pick his performance apart no matter what. And that reaction isn't changing whether they're 0-2, 1-1, 2-0.
And those are the people that would boo him in the third quarter of a preseason game, when the stadium's probably going to be halfway empty. Like, if we hear loud boos in the third quarter of the preseason game on Saturday, I would be pretty shocked.
Oh, I mean, I think it's... I don't know. Yeah, you're right. It just depends on how many are there. You know, like, what's the... How many people are locked into a preseason game at this point?
So like, I think there will be
variables on that. Yeah,
I think there will be some, but I like, it's going to be halfway full. Like at halftime of the Bears game last week, how many players or people were still in there? I can't imagine.
Preseason football's kind of lost its usefulness as a
spectator sport unless you're like really into like bottom roster guys. Other than that, I mean, there's just not much for it. This one from Bob, the subject matter is smaller quarterbacks. We hear a lot of talk about smaller quarterbacks not being physical or tall enough to compete in the NFL. Try telling that to Drew Brees. I've been a longtime fan of the Browns. My favorite quarterback that I actually remember watching play live was Brian Sipe. He was not a large man by any measure, but he had the fire to compete, and he executed the offense expertly. There's definitely some merit to physical quarterbacks, especially in cold weather, open-air stadiums. But I would take a smaller quarterback with talent and desire to succeed. I think this is just an overgeneralization. It doesn't, you would prefer, if you were doing a creative player, you would prefer 6'4", 220. That's what you would prefer, is that, over 5'11", or 6', 200. You would prefer bigger. But there are all sorts of anomalies that, through the years, you mentioned Sipe, Russell Wilson. I don't know that Dave Craig was a massive dude. Obviously, Drew Brees is the best example of it. I saw firsthand Bryce Young last year, who not only is short, but is slight in terms of his weight. I have a feeling that this has to do a little bit with Julian and the people talking about his size and some of the things there. I think one of the most misinterpreted things is just lack of understanding. I think a lot of people think Julian's like 5'10". I really think that, as opposed to 6'1". Like, I think that they think a lot of people think he's, like, short, and he's not. And he put on a bunch of weight. So, like, he's definitely not. Like, I think that from a style of play, collegiately, he's most similar to Bryce Young, but he's bigger than Bryce Young. He's actually a little taller than, like, Bake. So, like, just for, that's like the size that Julian is. But yeah, you can be the outlier and be a small guy, and you gave some examples, and I added some to it. But if you're doing quarterback out of a lab, you're probably designing something that looks a little bit like Peyton Manning or Josh Allen or Joe Burrow. That's what you're doing in a lab.
And am I going to take Dylan Gabriel over Tyvus Powell at quarterback? Well, yeah, I am, because Dylan Gabriel's better at it.
Yeah.
But there's also a reason why some of these guys, why you can point to the Drew Brees very easily, because there's not a lot like Drew Brees. And I also believe Drew Brees he's at least 6', maybe 6'1".
Yeah.
There's just a track record of this. Doug Flutie, I don't think anybody thinks Doug Flutie wasn't tough and Doug Flutie wasn't a good quarterback. But there were just some limitations when you're playing against the best of the best, and you're playing with offensive linemen that are 6'6" and 6'7", and defensive ends that are 6'4" and 6'5", and linebackers that are 6'4" coming at you. There's certain things that you can't see as well as a Peyton Manning who's 6'4" or 6'5". Like, we're seeing this with Ohio State right now. Tavian St. Clair is an all-get-off-the-bus kid. He's 6'4", 225 yeah. pounds, 230 pounds, ended up being a five-star. Luke Fahey's 5'10 or 5'11". He was just a three-star because of that. But if he's better and he can get the job done better, they're going to play him. There's just not a lot of examples of that.
I was watching a video the other day on Instagram, and it showed the perspective of Jalen Hurts in the pocket. Like, from his, he had like a helmet cam on. And it's one of those things, like, if you see the way they see, if you were 6'5", it would be easier to see over the lineman rather than trying to find the windows. Like, it's just a fact. And then on the other end of it, too, is a lot of times they attach the chip on the shoulder to the shorter guy. The 6-foot tall guy, he's kind of tough, and people like to cheer for him, which is like Baker's like the perfect example of that. But when we're at the NFL now, like, the 6'5" guy can also be tough and have the chip on the shoulder just as much as the 6-foot tall guy can. But people want to attach that to him because maybe they're fighting against the odds.
If you're going to be 6 feet tall, then you need to have, or less, you need to have elite traits. So you need to have elite arm strength or elite processing. Sometimes you can have both. Brees probably had both for the longest time, probably had both of those things. Russell Wilson had, though, he had those two things, and then he also had his mobility, and until that went away, he was in a pretty good spot. So you have to have both, whereas it's just easier to be 6'4", 6'5", and that's why you usually end up that way. It's not to say that you can't do it, it's just easier the other way. Joe Montana is as effective as any quarterback I've ever seen in my life. Joe Montana is not 6'4". He's 6'1". Like, it's fine.
And, Bo, this isn't just quarterbacks. I mean, this is most athletes that we see that play in the pros are just bigger humans. That's one of the reasons, like, I appreciate every time I see our guy Dane Sanzenbacher, because he's not as big as Tyvus or Bobby or Devere. But that just tells me how elite he was at what he did. Like, Doug Flutie and Dylan Gabriel, those guys are really, really elite at what they did. There's just certain limitations that you have because of that size. It makes me appreciate those smaller guys even more.
Yeah. Yeah, the curve is much, much harsher for them than it is for the big fellas. We'll continue with the mailbag after this quick timeout. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Think you know Buckeye football? These two say, hold my beer. The Beat with Austin and Berm.
Sponsored by The Waterworks.
Daily on The Fan's YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Your home of the Buckeyes, The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the afternoon, some breaks in the clouds, maybe an isolated shower or two that tries to pop up again. Highs in the upper 70s, but still watch out for leftover trouble spots from the heaviest stuff that fell earlier in the morning. Areas of fog possible early on Friday, mostly sunny otherwise with highs around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Distilled sports discussion. Served in light beer quantities. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Homes in Columbus know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides a year-round protection for one flat annual fee with regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. As we continue with the mailbag here on the program, this one from William, indeed it is. William writes, the subject matter is NFL Europe. As a veteran, by the way, thank you for your service. I love the idea of NFL in Europe. England and Germany both have multiple U.S. military bases and thousands of military men and women who would love to see a little piece of the U.S. once in a while. I agree that the NFL would need to develop more than one team, otherwise it won't work. You're going to get a Super Bowl over there. I mean, that's definitely happening. My hunch is that would happen in London first is where that will take place. But you're going to get a Super Bowl there. I think you're going to get a Super Bowl there in the next decade. I think that's very much in play. I've talked to some folks with the Browns about this because the Browns have been overseas quite a bit playing in various places, most often in London. They were there last year. And one of the things that to me feels like I had somebody say it almost would be like the NFL would need an entire division over there, like an entire four-team division to be played over there. And okay, I suppose that would make some sense. To me, the minimum requirement for there to be a permanent team in Europe would be that there would have to be two. Because I think it would be very difficult to get guys to want to play there. Not because Europe isn't great, it is, but because the lifestyle change, just the travel that you would have to do on a regular basis would just be so extreme. And how many people want to take their entire family and move it to London or move it to, I suppose the other places that would make sense would probably be Germany, but that adds to the flight time so much. I think London could support two teams for sure, but I'm much more pessimistic on it than I think a lot of people are. I think a Super Bowl is happening over there. I think it's really complicated if you try to put one NFL team or even two over in Europe.
I agree with you, Bo, and I'm one of those ones that thinks you need a whole division to really make it work. And then again, can you get enough players that want to do that? Now, it's one of those things, right, where there's only so many NFL jobs, and that's most people who play football's dream is to play in the NFL. So I think that they would do it if that was their only option. But how are you going to get guys to sign long-term there and things like that? So I'm more pessimistic about it as well, because I think you need a whole division to do it, to do it right. And I don't know if you're ever going to be able to field teams to fill those spots.
Free agency would be brutal. Like, who wants to every other week fly across the country. Like, the flight times alone, if you were telling me, or I guess fly across the world, actually, if you were telling me that, hey, if we don't have a home game, unless it's playing in division, you're probably going to have to fly over to the United States. Like, that would be brutal doing every, I mean, 4 to 5 times a year, maybe more than that. And so for free agency, that would be tough to convince guys to want to go there when you could just pick Miami or you could just pick LA or wherever the other options are.
Even if you had an entire division over there, right? That's only 6 games. The other 11 games are all going to be split half home. You're making 6 trips minimum.
Yeah.
And the time minimum. Change, like that portion of it too, your body. I mean, there's no way that team would perform great playing 6 away games.
And we always talk about this from like the East Coast perspective because it's a 6-hour flight from London from the East Coast, I do believe. So, but what... You can't just play the NFC East and the AFC East. Yeah. At some point, you're going to have to play the NFC West and the AFC West. And then what's that flight like?
And that's one of the reasons I say, like, I think you need a whole division so you can make sure when you go over there, if you're a team from the States, you've got 2 weeks. You can play 2 games at least.
Yeah, but even that, like, even if you play 2 games over there, like, how many teams want to sign up for that? Like 11 days, like away from family. I mean, I just don't think it's ever going to happen. I don't. I think you're going to get Super Bowls over there. Maybe you'll have multiple Super Bowls over there before you play, before you have a team permanently located over there. So we're in 2-a-days. We were talking about the Cardinals branding, and Matthew basically behaved like my 14-year-old. He went right to the ChatGTP. Or whatever it is, he went into Google and got it sorted out. And apparently, I did say this. I said there aren't even Cardinals in Arizona. And he pulled what is essentially NBC's move. Oh, yes, they are, Dad. Look. And he Googled it. And he was right, apparently, that they are. There are Cardinals in Arizona. They do live there, according to Google's AI. The Northern Cardinal lives year-round in the southeastern part of the state, especially around Tucson. I've not been to Tucson, so perhaps that's part of it. There's also a desert cardinal that lives across the southern and western desert areas. So, bully for you. You were right. I was wrong. I will eat the crow, Matthew. Thank you for pointing that out.
Hey, Dad, you think somebody can ski down Mount Everest?
Go to hell, Dick. That was a setup. Setup job. Can't believe I got to talk about the Panthers today.
Greatest team in the history of the world.
They really were. This one from the great Snags. He's watching Hard Knocks, and he writes, "You know what's great about this year's Hard Knocks? Seasons past, they've covered a team that was hopefully on the up or wanted the publicity or whatever. Now we are behind the scenes of the minds of the most recent Super Bowl champion. If they keep going forward documenting the Super Bowl champion, they're showing us how winners function. That's fly. Be good. Snags." He's right. He's right. It's really cool. Now, I'm not up to... I haven't seen the most recent episode of it. But what I have... I've seen 2 episodes, and both were great. And it is a window into excellence that you normally do not get out of Hard Knocks. I don't feel like Hard Knocks is as big a deal as it was 10 years ago. And I think the reason for that is so many of these teams now put out their own Hard Knocks-ish content. And so it doesn't have Liev Schreiber. It doesn't have NFL Films, the slow-mo of the ball rotating through the air. Like, it doesn't have the music that we love to play so much. It doesn't have any of those things. But you are getting a true behind-the-scenes look from a lot of these teams. And so what made Hard Knocks so unique for so long is now something that, I guess, imitation is the ultimate form of flattery. So many of these teams have imitated this and are doing their own thing. I mean, I did something with the Browns where they're doing something called wideouts. And it's a look at the wide receiver room, kind of a behind-the-scenes look at that. So, like, there's so much content out there that maybe what we love so much about Hard Knocks, we don't pay quite as close of attention to because all of these teams are doing it themselves.
So, Bo, I've never watched Hard Knocks, but it sounds like... Yeah, it sounds like that Hard Knocks... was its own worst enemy and caused its demise because all of the teams copy that and want to do it. Now, I haven't watched the latest season yet, but I have watched quarterback before. Mm-hmm. And then you just mentioned, then they did the wide receiver one. I don't know what they called that, but you said the Browns are doing something like that now. And yeah. As you said, imitation is the greatest form of flattery. Everyone's going to do it now, so shows like that may not be necessary, or people may not watch them anymore because they've already gotten the content on their favorites team social media platforms.
And I think about, too, now we're doing this former Super Bowl champion having their Hard Knocks. And I think the only Hard Knocks I've ever watched was coming off of an 0-16 season. That was the 2018 Cleveland Brownies Hard Knocks with good old Hugh Jackson. And that, I will say, it's the exact opposite of seeing the most functional organization, the drama of some good old Hard Knocks coming off of an 0-16 season. There was lots of good clips of Hugh in that one.
Was that Bob Wiley?
Yep.
Yep.
Two world wars.
He was like push-ups the star of that.
He was.
Push-ups and sit-ups. Two world wars. Won two world wars. Just push-ups and sit-ups.
Where is Bob now?
Seth Hunt.
He passed away. Right?
Did he?
Yes, I'm pretty sure he did.
Really? I know he was in the hospital. He had an incredible car collection, Bob did. He would drive like Maseratis and Aston Martins. I think he had like some family money or something, and he like flew planes. Like he had an incredibly rich life.
So I do not see that he has passed away. It says he's 75 now.
Trying to put him in the grave.
I swear he passed away.
Most recently was the offensive line coach of the Vegas Vipers of the XFL in 2023. Boy, does he seem like an XFL coach?
He's great. He was so much fun. I was in that Hard Knocks. That was my first year with the Browns, so I was in that one. The thing that was so crazy about that is, and that was my first training camp with the Browns, and what was so crazy about it is the guys they were talking about on Hard Knocks, anybody who was around the Browns knew that these were not people that were on the cut line at all. Like, you remember Devin Cajuste?
Yes.
The tight end, there was no chance that he was making that roster. There was no chance that Brogan Roback was making that roster. None. And they spent a lot of time with those guys. Like Devin Cajuste, like with the crystals and all that nonsense, he had no chance to ever make that roster. It was such a strange thing. And then Hugh, that shed light on why Hugh Jackson failed as a coach, as a head coach in the NFL. Because he played to all the cameras. Who could forget him like bringing Baker in to tell him that he'd been promoted to the backup quarterback? He was the number one overall pick in the draft, and they were insisting on playing Tyrod Taylor. And if Tyrod doesn't get hurt in that game against the Jets, who the hell knows how long that charade kept on? And then Bake comes in and is good right away. And it was like, well, yeah, that's what you do, is you do that. And then Hugh was gone shortly thereafter. But I think one of the other things with Hard Knocks in the original, like years ago, 20 years ago when it first came out, coaches were not aware that that it was going to really be seen. Like they were truly just behaving normally. And then I think Rex Ryan changed all that because he became very aware of his brand when they did it with the Jets and very aware of how he was going to be perceived. And I think that was kind of when it flipped a little bit. And then I think, honestly, like John Dorsey kind of just misled the Hard Knocks people when they were in Cleveland. Because what happens is the Hard Knocks people come to the general manager's front office. They say, well, who are guys that we should be focusing on? We need a couple of guys on the cut line and some of those things. I think Dorsey just gave him, he didn't want any part of it. I think he just gave him the wrong people. I don't know that for a fact, but that's my hunch on how all of that happened. So, but yeah, this one, the first two episodes that I saw were really, really good with Seattle. And it gives you a window into what it looks like at the very top of the sport. And I think it's hard for them to get teams to do it. If you go most recent Super Bowl champion, that's just part of the deal. Then I think you're maybe on to something right there. As long as you don't get a repeat champion, it feels like that could be a win. It's always a win when we get to talk to Mr. Feinbaum, get his thoughts on fifth-year players, NFL training camp players coming in. It's been such a scene today. We'll get to that with Mr. Feinbaum in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. Bishop and Friends present college football's most polarizing figure.
Oh, man, let me make.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Come on back to our show, Tim. The audience hates you.
This is ESPN's Paul Feinbaum, sponsored by the Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
Well, buddy, every time I think that maybe I've seen it all, a day like yesterday and this morning come, and then you say, well, there's a new one. I interviewed T.J. Harden as a member of the Cleveland Browns, Paul. the former running back from SMU and UCLA. He was in a Browns uniform this summer, and I interviewed him. And now he's in the transfer portal along with all of these other guys, three starters from Ole Miss, linebackers from LSU. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, you can't even raise your eyebrows, Bo, because it's out of control. I had somebody just screaming about this last night. So why can't we go back to the way it used to be? Well, because it's just not possible. And it is truly, I mean, it's not even surprising. I used a line once as a writer, the only thing surprising about this was it wasn't surprising. And that's really the answer here, Bo. As long as there are judges out there willing to make rulings and everyone willing to go along. And you know what I think it's time for? I think we need a commissioner or Charlie Baker to say, now this is why we need the Protect College Sports Act. even though the two do not equate.
You know that's coming. That's going to happen today at some point.
It's in the printer somewhere.
Someone's ready for it. If only we would have known, Paul. If only something like this had attempted to happen in basketball, I don't know, 6 months ago. Yeah. If only someone could have seen this coming, right?
You know, and back then, in the Betty Yocko case, which was Alabama, and the mm-hmm. endless others, and there was a modicum of outrage. I mean, I can't even keep up with all this, and when I see the alerts, I just keep going. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. more interested in what the Bonjules are today than I am who's playing for LSU.
I'm kind of the same way too. That let's do the football side of it. All of these guys now are going to try to find homes. What does that look like? For example, if LSU wants the linebacker back, if Ole Miss wants that defensive front back, like, what does that look like just in terms of from a coaching standpoint of, like, do you have the room on the roster? Who do you push out? How do you because a lot of these places, I'm assuming a lot of the places in the South are this way too, and I know Ohio State's this way. There is some budget that they have to kind of be under, and so all of a sudden, if now all of a sudden a starting linebacker comes in, you got to go find $1.5 million to pay him. So just what does that look like, and how many of these guys, do you think all of these guys end up playing this year?
Yeah, I think most of them will, because by now every coach knows who is good and who's not. So I think from a coaching standpoint, it's a little bit easier than it would have been maybe 2 months ago when there was mystery. And as far as the money, it's there. Yeah. I mean, there's still somebody out there. And this is where the rich get richer nonsense that you're not cringe about, but it's true. Ohio State will find a way. I sat with Steve Sarkisian 4 weeks ago yesterday. And he said, you know, we had to make room on the cap, so we let three of our starters go. These guys will not blink an eye. They are 2 weeks and 2 days away from the opener for most of these clubs. And the good news is that very few of them have challenging openers. So mm-hmm. it's really 3 weeks for Ohio State and for most. And they'll figure it out. And I know that sounds like I'm just evading the question. I'm not. But these guys are, there's GMs and there's assistant GMs and there's player personnel guys. This isn't 40 years ago where you got to go to the airport and wait for the film to come in. Everybody knows everything.
Yeah, and I think for the general fan, the thing that they say is, well, hold on. Everybody stood up on Sorsby and said, we're not going to play you. We're not going to do these things. Why won't they stand up against this? And the reality is because they all just want to win, Paul. Your point is exactly right. There's always money in the banana stand. If you watched Arrested Development, there's always money for more players if you want it. And there's always room to bring in more guys. And all of these guys just want to win. And quite honestly, there's a greed that comes with that. And in my opinion, that's exactly why this continues to happen.
Yeah, and going back 2 months, Bo, the Sorsby thing was really overdone. I mean, that was groupthink at DEF CON 1. And we talked about it at the time. And yeah, it was terrible. But I mean, it's kind of, I get cringe worthy when everybody says the same thing. And by the way, nobody's saying anything right now because at this point, we're all fatigued. We're tired of it. Mm-hmm. We actually want to get to the first game. There's high school football in most of the country tonight mm-hmm. And tomorrow night. And really, that's what we care about. And listen, I want to say this and I'll be quiet. Ross Dellinger is a good friend of mine. I think he's the best reporter. I cannot read another tweet from Ross Dellinger telling me what some conference commissioner said and what opposition there could be to some new amendment to the Protect College Sports Act. I mean, I think most of us are collectively over all that.
Entirely. It's funny you mention Ross, because there's few people I respect more in terms of the way they go about their business and the information that he gathers, but I'm just done. And if you and I are done, then what does that say about your and I's audience? They, you're right. We have high school football in Ohio tonight, full slate tomorrow night. People are jacked up for football. The game has endured despite the fact, Paul, that we are no closer to any sort of guardrails than we were 6 or 7 years ago. The game's never been more popular. So I guess that's the odd kind of cross to bear here on this thing.
Yeah, and Bo, I'm sure you've talked to these guys. Everybody had a story in the last 2 weeks about what each position costs. And I'm interviewing this guy the other day from whatever.com he was from, and it didn't even faze me. Like, okay, well, what's the snapper get? Yeah, he's way down. He only gets $500,000 to $750,000. And, yeah, you know, and their guys, meanwhile, it's 102 degrees in Alabama yesterday, and I see a UPS driver, you know, schlepping up some big hill. Hey, love the show. You know, that guy doesn't care what these guys make. He's trying to get home by 8 o'clock in one piece.
You're exactly right. They just want their football. They want it on Friday. They want it on Saturday. They want it on Sunday. Just want their football. Speaking of football on the field, AP poll came out this week. First time since 15, no SEC teams received a first place vote. Appropriate?
Yes. And I can't tell you the battles I had on the Paul Feinbaum show this week with Alabama fans and other fans. I mean, Alabama fans, they just don't get it. I mean, they want to go fight. Like, I had a guy like chase me down at a gym. 13. I go, you're lucky to be 13. And I had to kind of duck because I thought he might swing. I mean, that's how, and they're not the only ones. I mean, Georgia fans feel like they're being disrespected. I mean, they're number three. And then you get to, I made the mistake. I was on SportsCenter Live, and they fire the questions every year, Bo, and they go, okay, which one of these top 10 teams could be unranked? So you can't say, like, none of them, because they'll eject you out of the SportsCenter. So I said, Oklahoma. I mean, their schedule is absurd. I mean, they go to Michigan, you know the rest. So now, Boomer Sooner Nation, which hasn't done a thing in about 20 years, is coming after me, like, the nerve of you. I mean, don't you know who we are? Yeah, I know who you are. You choked a 17-point lead last year to Alabama. You were lucky to only lose three games. And you got a coach who a year ago was about to get fired. Now you think he's the next Bob Stoops. He's not.
No, he is. But that's the beauty of it. It's the delusion of all of it that's around there. And it's a lot of fun to have. I know you enjoy the heck out of it. I do as well. Who would you have number one in yours?
Yeah, here's where I probably should have ended the conversation a minute ago. I really like Oregon. And I'm not about to get into the same trap I did a year ago on this day when I, you know, opened my mouth about what Texas was going to do to Ohio State. but I do think Ohio State going to Texas is problematic. And that's why I had a hard time. And some of it was just, you hate to pick a team to be number one and then possibly see them lose within 2 weeks. So I'm playing it safe a little bit. I mean, I think Ohio State's a top three or four team, but I just think Oregon has a little more manageable schedule. I'll take either one of those quarterbacks. Okay. They're both great. Saying and Dante Moore, why I believe in Dan Lanning, I don't know, because he has not shown up in big games, but I just do.
Yeah, I think that makes all the sense of the world that Oregon, we talked about that too. I mean, they kind of return everybody, so they're in a situation where if not now, when? I think, I'll get you out of here on this one. I think they have the most pressure of anybody in the country in terms of from a country. Every place, like for example, I'm sure DeBoer is really feeling it. I'm sure there's all sorts of places where people are feeling it, but it does feel like just from a 30,000 feet, like if Oregon doesn't win it now, when are they going to win it exactly, right?
I agree, because I'm not saying that program is put together with duct tape, but it just feels fragile, and they should have already done it. So I do think they have to get it done now. I mean, Ohio State is just going to press the button and reload. You can't, because at some point Dan Lanning may say, you know what, I've had enough of this place. Mario Cristobal left a gold mine there and has done better. Alabama will be open one of these days. LSU could be open. Texas could be open. And Dan Lanning, you know, Georgia, Kirby Smart may say, I'm going to the NFL. So he would be the first choice for all those schools.
He certainly would. Good stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate your time.
Have you ever met a man who wins money betting on tennis? Enter Scotty Vegas. Join Scotty and Dave Biddle for On the Money.
Presented by Ohio for Responsible Gambling.
Sunday mornings at 9 on The Fan. The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by KDHVAC. Doing whatever it takes to keep your home comfortable. The Fan. What's the weather outside? Who cares? Bakers and shorts. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing or not a thing on a Thursday edition. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So a guy that we're a little familiar with around here, new Miami Dolphins head coach Jeff Hafley, was speaking with the media earlier this week, and he came up with a new mantra for his wide receivers when asked about one of his young ones returning.
How do your young receivers, especially with Bell coming back, fit into the idea that receivers can block too?
What do you mean? They better block. If they don't
Some
block.
Some receivers don't like to block.
Yeah, I mean, those receivers are going to block. No block, no rock. How about that one?
Thing or not a thing.
It's a funny line out of him. This is the worst receiving core, I mean, maybe in the history of the NFL. Have you guys looked at this? Have you looked? Do yourself a favor, kids. Pull up the two deep for the Miami Dolphins, okay? Raise your hands. Here, this is it on our lads. Jalen Tolbert, Caleb Douglas, Malik Washington, Chris Bell, Tutu Atwell, Kevin Coleman Jr. That's the top six.
They've got a couple old first-rounder reclamation projects way down there, and Terrence Marshall Jr. and Jalen Reagor.
Yeah. I mean, that is brutal. Brutal.
Yeah, you think about Malik Willis this season. Sounds like he might have a little bit of an uphill battle. This makes me happy, though, hearing that roster, because it now, the past couple seasons, I've been someone to say the Browns had the worst receivers in all of football. This makes me happy hearing that someone else might have worse weapons than we do after the Browns made some additions this offseason. Love the no block, no rock, by the way. I also, the answer to the reporter when he just goes, what do you mean? Obviously, we're going to force them to block. Just dismissing the question, I love that one, too.
Yeah. Where, Tyreek Hill, is he on a roster?
I don't believe he is.
And Waddle's in the at the Broncos now.
Yeah, he's not on a roster. Obviously, there's off-field stuff for him, but like, I am surprised he hasn't found a roster home yet.
I don't think it's any surprise that Hafley would say this, especially after spending his time here at Ohio State, and that's something that wide receivers have to do, and one of the reasons I think they've translated so well to the NFL. The other thing, he sounds just like one of the high school football coaches here in Ohio, and I can't think of who it is. Like, it's right there on the tip of my tongue, but I can't think of who it is. But he sounds identical to him. The University of Central Missouri announced this week a jersey partnership deal with Shelter Insurance, believed to be the first jersey patch sponsorship agreement in Division II. Now, industry sources are saying that this is a five-year contract worth six figures annually, and it will include a mark on the uniform of every varsity sport that University of Central Missouri sponsors. There's just one little bit of a problem here, Bo. D2 schools aren't technically allowed to have jersey patches yet. When the rule came down back in January, it was the NCAA Division I cabinet that approved the proposal. But that was just for Division I institutions. So Division II schools haven't yet decided on this. Thing or not a thing.
It would be such a classic NCAA thing if they decided to be tough guys on D2. Like, if they tried to, like, make D2 conform. Damn it, you will follow our rules. Your big brother might not, but you will. I mean, like, that's the... What are we doing? Like, if it's good for one, it's good for all. Like with everything, they would lose in court in a second if they decided to fight this. Now, I have no... What is this, Central Missouri? Is that what you said?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if they have the funds to fight any of this. I have no clue. But if they did, they'd win. So it's just silly, like, to
the amount of time they waste is really quite stupefying.
And for them, like a six-figure deal for this athletic department, for Division II, that would be substantial. That would be a nice little boost for them. And if the NCAA is like, no, actually, we're going to say, for the big guys, they can make the millions. Mm-hmm. You guys, six figures, that's a little bit too much down here to be putting towards your athletic program. I mean, potentially saving some sports and things like that, scholarships. Yeah, maybe not. We're just going to have you guys play by a completely different set of rules.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is who need what university needs this more, Central Missouri or Missouri?
Right.
You know, like here in town, Ohio Dominican or Ohio State, who needs money more right now?
Right, 100%.
Bo, this one here is near and dear to our hearts, especially mine. Pete Thamel reported yesterday afternoon that Tennessee and Alabama will both wear their home jerseys for the games between the rivals in 2026 and 2027. This will mark the first time since 1970 that they wore Alabama crimson and Tennessee orange in the game, which had been a long-standing tradition. To that point, the uniform agreement came together through the work of Alabama AD Greg Byrne, Tennessee AD Danny White, and, of course, the head coaches Kalen DeBoer and Josh Heupel. This year's game will be in Knoxville, and it will look beautiful, thing or not a thing.
Yeah, so USC, UCLA have been doing this for a while. That's an undefeated. When they do it, it looks great when these guys do it. There is, however, no example of this that would look better than the game. Red contrasting with navy, silver contrasting with yellow, all of it works. They've done it. I think we've gone into this one time, and I think like in the 50s one time they did it fake.
So they did it until 1954, and that's the last year they did it. And it sounds like the reason they stopped doing it was black and white TV.
Yeah, yeah. So black and white TV changed all of it. And that's because my hunch is up until that point, you only had one uniform.
You didn't need two.
You didn't need two. You had one. But obviously now we have HD and you have a perfect contrast with red and scarlet and navy. This might also be the right time if you wanted to try something like this that you could, because you have an adult in the room at Michigan, like an actual human being, adult, real guy. So like you could call Kyle Whittingham and say, hey, man, what do you think? And he might be for it. They may have done it in the Holy War game.
They did.
In my head, did they?
They did. I, that's what I was going to say. Is I remember the BYU, Utah. They did it as well. And immediately when I saw like the blue versus the red, I was like, oh, it looks incredible. Florida, Georgia doing it as well a couple times. And I mean, if they have two contrasting colors where you're not going to confuse them, I say, why wouldn't you do it? Let them wear their actual colors.
I agree. I've been preaching this and asking for this for a long, long time. The one thing that I do ask is if they do it, Michigan cannot be in the all blue. We can't do that. They've got to wear the maize pants.
Yes.
You've got to have them contrasting, too. The other thing, Bo, we're all worried about money all the time, right? What a perfect color matchup in the game sponsored by Sherwin-Williams or you know, Bear and Paints
or Heinz.
Yeah, it'd be
perfect. Give me a little ketchup and mustard.
Headquartered right here in Ohio with Sherwin-Williams. So yeah, you could do that. Yeah. I love this. I think this will look great.
We can get to this one real quick. Akron football has named the 9 finalists for his offensive coordinator of the game contest. Athletic director Andrew Goodrich reached out to the finalists before the news broke yesterday. The list includes 3 Akron season ticket holders, Big Cat from Barstool.
Big Cat's doing it?
A popular YouTuber and streamer from Kentucky, and then one person each from Nebraska, Kansas City, New York, and Austin, Texas. The offensive coordinator of the game winner will be named Tuesday, August 25th. Goodrich said the winner has already been drawn, but not revealed to the public. Thing or not a thing?
I'd rig that drawing to make sure it's Big Cat, is what I would do, because that's where you'd get your biggest bang for your buck if you're Akron.
I mean, they've rigged it thus far, clearly. I mean, if he's one of the 9 finalists, that was by chance. I mean, you think about however many people. I know that a month ago, whenever this came out, weeks ago, they were already almost sold out of the tickets, which I'm sure their stadium sells a handful of seats, at least for this. So if Big Cat's one of the 9 finalists, let's just go all the way and give it to him.
So is Big Cat now a season ticket holder at Akron?
Yes.
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, I guess he is.
He has to be.
I just think that's beautiful from a, like, from their perspective. Like, what a win for them. If all of a sudden you get, and he can pump it on the platform. What a win for Akron. I mean, that's really smart. Good innovation out of Akron up there. That's a good job out of them. Two-a-days continues coming up next. We close out the NFC South. We will do the hated Carolina Panthers, and we will do the Atlanta Falcons. That's coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Ryan Baker. The Cincinnati Reds and Cleveland Guardians both look to pick up series wins this afternoon. The Reds beat the St. Louis Cardinals 5-4 last night to even up their five-game series. The finale down in Cincy coming up here at 12:40. Brady Singer gets the ball for the Reds opposite Michael McGreevy. You can catch the pregame starting at 12:10 over on the Fan 2. The Guardians were shut out by the San Francisco Giants 1-0. The rubber game up in Cleveland at 1:10. Gavin Williams versus Landon Ruiz. The pitching matchup. The Cleveland Cavaliers added wing Peyton Watson to the roster in a multi-team trade yesterday. Watson then signed a four-year, $88 million extension. Rough night for the Crew. They lose to Montreal 2-1. Roosters has given away 12 Ultimate Buckeye experiences. Tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today at roosterswings.com.
Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat, because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour here on a Thursday edition of the program. Time for a little two-a-days as we close out the NFC South.
Bishop and Friends present Two-A-Days, our professional preseason preview of all 32 teams. Will your favorite team win it all this season? I doubt it.
All right. This was, well, I remember exactly when this was. This was September 28th. September 28th of last year. Okay. NBC had just won a little bet with me, $100 bet, where he kind of set me up, kind of rigged the game, and said, "Hey, Dad, somebody skied down Mount Everest. What do you think of that?" And I said, "Nobody skied down Mount Everest. You're out of your mind. That doesn't even make any sense." He's like, "No, they did." And I said, "I bet you $100. $100 says nobody's ever skied down Mount Everest." And then he immediately showed me a video of some Red Bull dude skiing down Mount Everest. And I go, "Okay, fine." He goes, "You owe me $100. And I said, "I'm like, okay, fine. I owe you $100. So then we're watching the Carolina Panthers, because he likes the Carolina Panthers for some reason. And they're on the red zone, and they're getting bombed by the New England Patriots in a game they inevitably lost 42-13. And he's like, "It's early. They're going to be fine." And I said, "I tell you what, I will bet you." Actually, the first bet, I think, was 500, which we were just throwing around nonsense numbers. I had no intent of actually paying him. So I said, "I go double or nothing that the Panthers don't make the playoffs." And he goes, "Are you telling me that I'll get $1,000 if they make the playoffs and nothing?" And I'm like, "Yes, you understand double or nothing." They were 1-3. And they made the playoffs. Now, I did not give him $1,000 cash. I invested some of it, and I did buy him a new set of golf clubs. So I did pay the debt, because I'm a Lannister. He's always got to pay their debts. But from that point forward, I have no patience for the Carolina Panthers on anything. They went 8-9 last season and somehow won this ridiculous division. They actually damn near beat the Rams in a playoff game where I almost did double or nothing again with him, 34-31. They showed signs of life as the season went along with Bryce Young. They've added a few guys in the roster. Obviously, offensive tackle Monroe Freeling is going to be at the top of this, the first-round pick. He joins the mix as well. They are a team that with some of the, you think about Tet McMillan, you think about some of the talent that they have, feels like it could be on a little bit of an ascent. But it does entirely depend on if you believe in Bryce Young. And if Bryce Young, that thing almost went the other way entirely with Bryce Young. Like, almost like they were ready to just give up on him. And then all of a sudden that deal that they did with the Bears would have gone down as one of the worst. That would have been like the Herschel Walker trade, you know. Where it basically set up the Bears for ultimate success. So that's the pressure that's on Young. He is generously listed at 5'10", 204. I don't think Bryce Young's weighed 204 pounds ever in his life. I don't think he's weighed 204. 5'10 feels pretty accurate. But the 204 is not. I would say he's more like 175. It's shocking how small and how slight he is. But he did come around as the season went along last year and did get better and better and had some really nice moments. He had a win against Atlanta when he went 31 of 45 for 448, three touchdowns, no picks. Kind of lit them up a little bit. Even in the season finale loss to Tampa Bay, he went 24 of 35, 266, two touchdowns and a pick. So he has performed pretty well in the playoff game, 21 of 40, 264, a touchdown and a pick. I don't know if he can ever justify the number one pick in the draft, but I can also say that he doesn't feel like a total bust at this point either. I am not very bullish on them this year, though, gentlemen. But they could also just be valedictorian of summer school again in a division that's really, really bad.
Yeah, the Bryce Young thing was dead in the water, and then he showed some signs of life last season. As I look at their year, they beat Atlanta, they beat Miami, they beat Dallas, they beat the New York Jets. They did beat Green Bay, which was kind of a surpriser. Atlanta, they got in overtime. The crazy one was the Los Angeles Rams game. Like, where did that come from? And then they played the Rams really tough in the postseason.
They did.
As well, too. They did lose three of their last four as they came down the stretch in the regular season, including a game to Tampa Bay that I believe ended up not meaning anything by the time it was over, but could have meant a lot that last week. I guess we'll have to see, because I think we all thought Jaden Daniels was a home run, and I think we all have some questions about Jaden Daniels now. So I guess we'll see with Bryce Young. They did a really smart thing last year, I believe, in drafting Tet McMillan to give Bryce Young a big-time weapon. And they also had kind of a revelation at the running back spot last year with Rico Dowdle. I'm surprised they didn't keep him. He's in Pittsburgh now.
He is, yeah.
They're banking on Jonathan Brooks coming back and being healthy and being a 1-2 punch with Chuba Hubbard. And Jonathan Brooks has never been able to stay healthy, it seems like.
No.
So I do not think that this is a team that will be in the playoffs this year. I mean, they always say, what, half of the teams are out? I don't think the Carolina Panthers will be back in this year.
Me either, but I'm not betting it.
Because they certainly, in that division, they won't be out of it for a long time unless this thing completely falls off the rails early on.
No, it's just a bad division. I mean, we did it yesterday. We did the Saints and the Bucks yesterday, and the Bucks seem like the best of these teams. But like I said, it's valedictorian to summer school. Let's hit the categories on the Panthers. We start with your coach grade for Carolina.
I've just got Dave Canales at a C, and maybe he deserves better than that, getting this team into the playoffs last year. I just don't know if there's enough data points on him yet for me to put him any higher.
I also had him down as a C, and I thought the same thing, like the playoff thing, but for me, he only got into the playoffs because it was the division. Like, he's not getting into the playoffs in any other division, so how can I hold him to a different standard than I would hold any coach in the AFC North or the AFC West or the AFC East or anywhere where you have to win 10 games to actually make the playoffs? So, yes, they made the playoffs. Did they make it in a funky way? Yes. Am I going to reward him for that? No.
I'm going to go B here because I think that if I were to look at this division at the start of last season, my hunch is that I probably would have picked Carolina last in the division. And whatever it is, he did win it, and he did elevate them, and they put a scare into the Rams in the playoffs. So that tells me that he has some belief. I can't go higher than B, but I do think he's proven that he's been above average to this point. Uniform grade for the Carolina Panthers, Bick.
I'm probably a little too high on them, but I love the color scheme. I'm giving them an A-. When they would wear the black jersey with the silver pants and the silver top, I think that's pretty darn good.
I love these jerseys. I had these down as an A because I love the blue that they have is such like a kind of neonish blue. It's so strong, and then the silver helmets look really good. I just imagine like Cam Newton in the all blues. It looked so strong. So I had this one down as an A.
Well, look, this is why NBC liked him when he was little. I said, pick an NFC team in case the Browns aren't good. And he picked in that given year. And so he picked Carolina because it was Cam Newton and it was these colors. Like, this is pretty easy to root for. It's black, silver, and bright blue. And they had Cam Newton. Like, geez, this is easy. So, yeah, I think it's really strong. And I actually think, I mean, a Panther is black. So even when they wear the all blacks, I don't love the unitard look. But even in the all black, it kind of makes sense because of who they are, much similarly to the Ravens when they wear the all black. So, yeah, I think it's like, it's probably an A minus for me. And I think the only thing it doesn't have is just the nostalgia that comes with some of these other uniforms just because they've been around our whole life. And for guys like me and Bake, the Carolina Panthers have not. If you could take one franchise great and add them to this team, who would you add, Bake?
There was like a handful of guys right away that I thought of, and all of them I think you could plug in and they'd be better what they had than what they have at those positions right now. But I don't know how you go against Cam Newton. I mean, he single-handedly took him to a Super Bowl.
Yeah. At his best, he was pretty unstoppable force.
Yeah, he was the first one that obviously comes to mind. He could win this division single-handedly. You could probably take a weapon or two away from him, and he would still win this division in his prime. The other one that I had considered was Steve Smith, wide receiver, just because you only really have Tet McMillan. I think Jalen Coker's their wide receiver, too, so you probably need a little bit more in that wide receiver room. If you really believed in Bryce Young, which I don't, then you would pick Steve Smith, but Cam is the answer.
Well, I'll give you another one, Christian McCaffrey. Like, if you don't want to use Cam, you put Christian McCaffrey on this team with Bryce Young, and they're going to be in a pretty good spot with him. And there's a lot of Julius Peppers at his best there was incredible. Yeah.
Steve Smith. Think of Peppers.
Peppers would have been, Luke at his
Kuechly.
Best. Kuechly. Jeez.
D'Angelo Williams.
Yeah, they've had a lot of studs. They really have. A lot of really cool
Greg
players.
Olson.
Yeah, Greg Olson. Boy, that might be. That might be the answer. If you can't use Cam, like Greg or McCaffrey would be a game changer for a young quarterback to have somebody like that. Franchise tier for Carolina, S being the best, F being the worst.
I'm giving them a C, and this could have easily been a D because there's been a lot of times when they're bad, they're really bad. But they got Cam, and they stayed relevant for a long time, and it looks like they're trying to be relevant again, so I'll keep them at a C.
I had them down as a C+, just because the only years during my life they've been super relevant was when Cam had his breakout years, and then that, for me, didn't feel very long, so I'm going C+ on this one.
I mean, they did play for us in the Super Bowl with Jake Delhomme.
Yeah.
I mean, like, that happened. I think as an expansion franchise goes, you think of the expansion franchises in all sports of the last 25 years,
been pretty good.
They've been pretty good. It's probably, I'm gonna, they've had some off-field stuff with previous ownership and this ownership, which isn't great, so I'll go C+ as well, but I think on the field it's probably more like a B- in terms of the foothold and the stranglehold they have in the area and in the division. Win it all, playoffs, building or busting, Bake?
I think they're busting. Because, I mean, maybe they could be building, but they were a playoff team last year. I don't think they will be this year, and that's a bust to me.
This is year four with Bryce Young. If you have any faith in him at all, this should be the year that he really takes off and gets them into the playoffs. They made the playoffs last year. I think they are busting this year.
I think they're building, but I think they'll miss the playoffs. But I still think they're headed in the right direction with a ceiling on Young, just because I think there's a ceiling of how good he can be in the National Football League. His size is just so alarmingly small. We hit the Falcons coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Buckeyes are ranked number one, so let's talk about them. Endless Buckeye conversation awaits you on your home for Ohio State Athletics. The Fan.
Trust isn't...
I have a special announcement. Common Man and Timmy is the most listened to radio show in the state of Ohio. Coming in at number two, Common Sense. You should listen anyway.
Weekdays from 3 to 6.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
For the afternoon, some breaks in the clouds, maybe an isolated shower or two that tries to pop off again. Highs in the upper 70s, but still watch out for leftover trouble spots from the heaviest stuff that fell earlier in the morning. Areas of fog possible early on Friday, mostly sunny otherwise with highs around 80. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Keep your friends close and your producers closer. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, we close out the NFC South with the Atlanta Falcons. Last year, 8-9, they did win their last four kind of stupidly, especially considering they were going to make a coaching change, which was inevitable and felt known at that point. So it hurt their draft position decently. In terms of additions, it starts a coach. Kevin Stefanski comes in. He will be the new head coach of the Atlanta Falcons. I know Kevin pretty well from his time in Cleveland, and he will bring... offensively, if he has a quarterback who trusts in what he's coaching him and he trusts the quarterback, you're going to get some innovation from a play calling perspective. I think Kevin in Cleveland was largely a success. He won coach of the year twice, but obviously the last couple of years ended fairly poorly. And I think it just kind of got to a point where it'd run its course a little bit. But I do think he can be a shot of an adrenaline for him, albeit his press conferences will not be. And I'm guessing Bake is very happy that he will not have to cut up Kevin Stefanski audio anymore, because he very rarely said anything in the press conferences up in Cleveland.
I actually enjoyed cutting up Kevin's press conferences because you never had to do it. You just took the one from last week.
It's just this is pretty easy.
Exact same.
Same thing every week. They added Tua Tagovailoa as well, who's quite honestly pretty perfect for what Kevin wants out of a quarterback. Za'Darius Smith comes in. That was just this week. Austin Hooper knows Kevin from his time in Cleveland, so he comes in as well. Other notables, I think Brian Robinson backing up Bijan Robinson is going to be a big-time hit there. This roster is pretty decent. It did get a hit with the suspension that is coming for James Pierce and the injury that's coming off of that as well, so that's a bit of a hit. But in terms of just like their overall talent, it's pretty good. There's weapons on offense. I think what is going to be very interesting is how Kevin handles quarterback. And this is something he dealt with in Cleveland a lot. You know, he had a quarterback competition last year that had four guys in it that was going to be Kenny Pickett. And then Kenny Pickett hurt his hamstring, and all of a sudden Kenny Pickett was traded, and it ended up being Joe Flacco, who wasn't even there at the time. I mean, it just was pretty crazy. So I just am curious, like, how Kevin handles Tua and Michael Penix Jr. Matt Ryan is now the face of the organization. Arthur Blank brought him in to kind of be over all of it. He knew Kevin previously, had a previous relationship with him. That's why as soon as Matt Ryan got the job in Atlanta, I knew that's where Kevin would end up, and I knew that Kevin wanted to coach next year. This team should be further along than they are. They've got a lot of shiny toys, especially weapons on offense, and for whatever reason, they just haven't ever been able to put it together. I don't know if this is the year or not. My hunch is it's not, just because I don't trust the two quarterbacks.
It's interesting that you mention a lot of shiny toys, because I think that's what they are, is just shiny. I've never, like, I think Drake London's a good receiver, but he's not nearly as good as the Ohio State receivers, and people always tried to tell me that he was, and I just don't think he is. I think Kyle Pitts is pretty overrated as well, because it kind of reminds me of David Njoku. Like, Kyle Pitts will go up and make a poster catch, but then when you really need that one on third down to extend a drive and he's wide open, he just drops it.
Yeah.
And I just think, I think these guys, I think they have the talent to be really good, but I'm not sure how great they are. And if when I look at this Atlanta Falcons roster, this reminds me a lot of the Browns roster at the beginning of Kevin Stefanski, whereas you have this really good offensive line, and I think the Falcons do have a good offensive line, and you have an elite running back, maybe the best in pro football. Is Kevin going to use him? Because that's one of the things that drove me nuts about Kevin Stefanski more than anything. I remember a Thursday night game, I think it was against the Denver Broncos, and the Browns are starting Nick Mullins, and Nick Mullins is throwing the ball 30 times, and Nick Chubb's getting 14 carries. Mm-hmm. Or a game against the Patriots where Jacoby Brissett's throwing the ball 45 times, and Nick Chubb's only getting 18 carries. So to me, if I am, I understand you've got these weapons and you think they're good, but if I'm this Falcons team, run the ball 40 times a game, 50 times a game.
And you've got Brian Robinson behind Bijan. And so that's one of the things, too. With Kevin coming to Atlanta, I think it's going to hinge a lot on the quarterback position, obviously, and him. But one huge advantage that he has here that he didn't have in Cleveland is the division is so much weaker than it was when he was in the AFC North. Prime years for Joe Burrow, Lamar Jackson, the Steelers. Like, it's completely different. He's going to have way more room for error here. And if he's able to take his system, any parts of it that look like in 2020, and bring it here, they should be very successful in this division.
Should be. He's got to get quarterback situated. I'm curious to talk to our guest here in about 6-7 minutes. Like, it feels like it's going to be Tua. So, like, what is, you know, so then what do you do with Penix, who was a kind of a shocking pick when they picked him because they just signed Cousins? Like, so they have some real dysfunction in their front office that we'll see if Matt Ryan can kind of clean all of that up. That's kind of his job, is to sort those things out. But there are some pieces to work with here. All right, categories on the Falcons. Coach grade for Kevin Stefanski. Bake.
Bo, this may not be fair because of my bias as a Browns fan and some of the things that I just talked about that drove me crazy with Kevin Stefanski. But I'm just not a fan of these coaches that believe, well, I drew this play up, it doesn't matter who's in there, it should work.
Mm-hmm.
Because the play is designed so well. I give Kevin Stefanski a C-. I'm just not a fan.
I had Kevin as a B. And the reason I had Kevin as a B, because they just hired him. And I think as you look at the coaching market and who was available, I think Falcons fans should be pretty content with Kevin Stefanski coming into the season, where he's not a huge question mark. He has had success. He struggled at the end of his tenure in Cleveland. And I think towards the end of his tenure, it was one of those times when you just need a new person in the room. Like, he had run his course. There were good times with Kevin. There were bad times. He did a lot of great things. He wasn't always dealt a really great card. And I look at the quarterback situation, too. I mean, he made some great Browns teams out of some bad quarterbacks. You look at the Flacco year when he was able to get them there. There were some great games with P.J. Walker that didn't make any sense. So yeah. I do. There's a lot of bright spots in Kevin. I think towards the end of his career in Cleveland, it ended in a horrible way. But I think if you're looking for a new hire, I thought he was a pretty good get for the Falcons.
Yeah, I'm going to go B-. One thing I noticed towards the end of his tenure in Cleveland is some of the innovation left. In the early years, he was an incredible innovator. And he lost some of that. Now, Bill Callahan's back coaching his offensive line, so I think that'll help too. Like, he trusts Bill implicitly, and Bill's probably the best in the business on the offensive line, so I think that'll help. Brings Tommy Reese with him as well, so some familiarity. So I'm going to go B- here, but I think, Isaiah, you had a lot of pretty accurate points on how it kind of all went down in Cleveland. Uniform grade for the Falcons, Bake?
I think it's a C, but it should be an A.
Yeah, well said.
I'm in the same spot. I had it down as a B-. I used to love their uniforms when Julio was playing. And then last year, they went to the weird gradient uniforms that I hated. They've transitioned into a new kind of more traditional look, but it still isn't what it was.
No, they have two A-plus uniforms in their catalog that they should just wear. They're wearing one of them this year, which is the red hat with the black top and the white pant. Like, that is an A-plus uniform. That's the way old school one that's got a little thin gold stripe in it, which is an homage to Georgia Tech, and then the red for Georgia. Like, that's a home run. The other thing that they have is they have the Deons.
Just go back to that.
With the black and the silver pants. Like, that look is stunningly cool. And for whatever reason, they won't just wear them. I mean, I don't understand it.
Even the Deion, they did the red hat with the silver pants sometime, and it was great.
It's great. Yeah. Like, this isn't hard. You got a really cool logo, really cool colors, and they continue to, like, not. This is better than what they were because these are brand new this year, but there's an A-plus out there, and they just won't do it. One franchise great that you could add to this team. Bake.
This might be the most difficult one of all because I think they have two absolutely no-brainers. But just because there's questions at their quarterback spot and Kevin loves lefties, it's got to be Mike Vick for me.
Ooh, Michael Vick.
Jeez, broke my brain.
My favorite ever
you just broke my
is
brain,
Warwick man. Dunn. I loved Warwick Dunn.
He's a good dude, too.
I also, leaning into the quarterback position, I think that Kevin would love some Matt Ryan because I saw him with Joe Flacco. Matt Ryan is pretty damn close to what Joe Flacco was. If we're going to go away from quarterback, I mean, I'd like to see primetime play again. That sounds good to me.
Yeah, Julio Jones. I mean, we did all this without mentioning Julio Jones as well, like opposite Drake London would be a big-time problem. Mike Vick. In today's NFL, where coaches would actually put him in a position to succeed rather than trying to make him be a West Coast quarterback, would have been a scene, an absolute scene. Franchise tier for the Falcons, S the best, F the worst. Bake, what do you got?
I got them as a C. I think they're just a middle-of-the-road franchise. They've had some really highs, but they've also had some really baffling moments.
Yeah, they should be higher.
Yeah, I had them as a C-plus here. Yeah, some good things, but a lot of just average.
Stunning stadium, cool brand, a city all to themselves, a city that a lot of guys want to live in. There's just no scenario where this isn't an A, but they just haven't been able to do it. It doesn't make any sense, but it's a C. Yeah, absolutely. Win it all, playoffs, building or busting. Bick.
I was going to say bust, but in this division, with that offensive line and with Bijan Robinson, they should be a playoff team.
Yeah.
Yep, I have them as building. I think they have a lot of good pieces here. Still trying to search at the quarterback position. If they could figure that out, I mean, they'd be in a good spot.
I think they're building, but I think they think they're a playoff team, so I think it's right on that spot. It'll just come down to quarterback. For some perspective on the Falcons, Aaron Freeman will join us in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
Fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. They've all been paid by the Cleveland Browns. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, let's get some perspective on the Atlanta Falcons and the NFC South. We head out on the Bryant Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Aaron Freeman, Locked On Falcons, joins us there. Aaron, thank you so much for the time. Before we get into the team, they redid the uniforms again. And from way up here, 30,000 feet, I'm just saying, God, why don't they just wear the old ones? They're wearing one of the old ones. What did the fan base want in this most recent uniform redesign? And did they get what they wanted?
I think for the most part, they got what they wanted. But yeah, there was very much a vocal contingent of fans that just want the throwbacks. And I think the Falcons want to keep the throwbacks as more of a special case. They've had so much success over the last couple of years. And I think they may be feeling a little superstitious that if they wore them all the time, they would maybe not have as much success as they've had in recent years. So I think for generally speaking, the new uniform changes have been met with a positive reaction, but you know, you can't please everybody, right?
No, you never can. Speaking of pleasing, what is Arthur Blank's popularity level with this fan base as the owner?
You know, it's the classic case of when the team is not successful, which has been far too often these last 8 years with the Falcons out making the playoffs. You know, I think it's easy for folks to say, well, the one thing that is consistent, because the Falcons have had different quarterbacks, different coaches, all those various things. Well, it's clearly the ownership that is part of the problem. But I think that tends to be more of the vocal minority of folks that are looking for someone to blame. And certainly I think there has been some questionable decisions that Arthur Blank has made and questionable hires that he has made over the last decade since the team has gone on this downward trend. But I think for the most part, I think most fans recognize that he has the key trait that you want in an ownership, which is the desire to win, the willingness to spend, and the willingness to hire people and let the football people make football decisions and not necessarily meddle with that. But, you know, when you're not hiring football people that are making great football decisions, then all of a sudden people start pointing the finger at you.
Boy, and what you just laid out, he did probably in spades with the hiring of Matt Ryan. What differences have you noticed with Ryan now fully invested and kind of, I suppose, you correct me if I'm wrong, kind of the face of the operation?
Yeah, you know, Matt Ryan has kind of taken over as the entity that's going to hold the football people accountable. And Arthur Blank has kind of deferred that as he's gotten older in this situation. And, you know, so far Matt Ryan has been, you know, more of a face than, you know, someone that has been in the trenches making the football decisions. And I think, again, that's a good move for Matt Ryan, coming from television, coming from obviously a very long, successful playing career, and sort of being new president of football role and sort of kind of still feeling that role out, and kind of letting Ian Cunningham, the Falcons' new GM, Kevin Stefanski, the new head coach, kind of do their own thing. And if he needs to be there for them as a sounding board, he is there. If he needs to go out there and help some of the wide receivers warm up by throwing them some passes early in practice, he's been there for that. So I think Matt Ryan has been, you know, a very positive presence for the Atlanta Falcons, but certainly you can't sit here and say anything like, oh, well, Matt Ryan did this or Matt Ryan has done this. I think he's kind of still feeling out this role.
Aaron, full disclosure, I hosted the Kevin Stefanski show for several years and know him pretty well. What do the Falcons need Kevin Stefanski to be?
That's an interesting question because he's not necessarily going to call plays, right? As we saw the last couple of years in Cleveland, kind of, stripping himself of play calling duties for Ken Dorsey and Tommy Rees. Tommy Rees now here in Atlanta. And so you can't say, oh, well, we need him to be, you know, this mastermind of a brilliant offensive coordinator to kind of lead this team right now. And so he's kind of taking more of that role as the CEO, as the sort of accountability guy type of head coach. And, you know, he's going to have major input on the direction of this football team and sort of what you're hoping from Kevin Stefanski this season in particular is, can he get this team motivated and able to play at their best level each and every Sunday, more so than anything else? And then, you know, potentially beyond this year, when the Falcons have to deal potentially with, you know, a potential another change at quarterback, he's going to probably have a lot more input on that decision and potentially guiding this team with a new franchise quarterback.
Yeah, it's interesting because I always felt Kevin's superpower was actually his play calling. And I thought that when that happened, he kind of lost what separated him because he was an elite play caller early on in his time in Cleveland. And then it fell off a little bit. So I think that's interesting that's the route that they're choosing there. You mentioned quarterback. What's the plan there this year?
That's the question that everybody's asking right now because no one really knows. Right. And, you know, from his days in Cleveland, you know, a lot of the talk was that Devin Gabriel was his handpicked guy because he likes a quarterback like Tua Tagovailoa. And sort of you wonder if Tua Tagovailoa and the selection of him this offseason was, you know, Kevin Stefanski saying, this is the guy that I believe can run my offense or run Tommy Rees's variation of my offense. And so far right now, Tua's been very up and down, and unfortunately there seems to be more downs than ups as of late. And so you wonder if there's going to be a long leash on a player like Tua Tagovailoa who's playing under a veteran minimum contract, no guaranteed money. And it's in contrast to the situation the Falcons had 2 years ago when they brought in Kirk Cousins, paid him an enormous salary, and also had in Michael Penix waiting in the wings, and they had financial reasons to commit to Kirk Cousins for the better part of 2 years rather than immediately tossing the keys to Michael Penix. They don't have that situation right now with Michael Penix recovering from that ACL tear, and he has yet to be cleared fully for team practices and playing in the preseason. But we're expecting that to happen potentially in the next week or so for him to get cleared. And it feels like it's a ticking clock on Tua Tagovailoa, who probably at this rate is going to be the week one starter. But mm-hmm. his performance over these last couple of days in practice and in the preseason game really puts that at odds. And sort of we're just kind of looking at a situation where I think Michael Penix is going to be the Falcons starting quarterback sooner versus later. It's just a question of when, not if.
Aaron, what have you seen from Penix? Like, where do you kind of have him in terms of what they drafted him to be, which was to be a franchise quarterback? Does he have that in him?
I think that's really the debate right now with Michael Penix. He has the ability to be, I think, a effective starting quarterback. But whether or not he can be the guy that you say, we're going to hitch our wagon to Michael Penix for the next 5, 7, 10 years, that part, I think, remains to be seen. A big reason why you have that question mark is the durability concerns. 5 season-ending injuries in the last 8 seasons, going back to his time in college at Indiana and Washington. And then when you look at some of the other issues that Penix has been dealing with, you know, accuracy has not been great. He's not necessarily a guy that can, you know, extend plays outside the pocket. He's much more of a pocket quarterback. And usually that combination of pocket quarterback usually is combined with, you know, a really accurate precision passer. And that has not been something that Penix has really mastered at this point. He has a big, strong arm. But the issue last season in particular was he wasn't really hitting those down the field throws. And if a player like Michael Penix with his skill level is not hitting those downfield throws, you're not getting, you know, a really precise player from the pocket or a play extender, then you kind of wonder, okay, what exactly are you bringing to the mm-hmm. table? So those are some of the issues that I think Michael Penix is going to have to show this season, hit those big field, big passes down the field, attack the middle of the field more effectively, be able to operate more under center under Kevin Stefanski and Tommy Reese's offense, and be, show that, that knee is not going to hinder you from being able to, if you need to scramble, if you need to get outside the pocket and buy yourself more time, that knee is not going to stop you from doing those things.
Aaron Freeman, our guest, Locked On Falcons on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. Buddy, I'll get you out of here on this one. It sounds like a lot of questions for this Falcons team, but this is a division without any team that looks to me like one that can go win a Super Bowl. And I think that's probably what most would think. What is kind of your pecking order 1 through 4 in August of how you kind of see this thing as they go into the season?
Yeah, you nailed it, right? And if the Falcons played in any other division, we'd be picking them probably, given all these questions, to be dead last in whatever division they were playing in. But in the NFC South, hey, they could be the best team in this division. You never know. Right. That's how rough this division is. I put the Falcons probably third. There's no world where I, as someone who covers the Atlanta Falcons and rooted for the Atlanta Falcons for 3 decades, can ever put the New Orleans Saints above them. So the Saints are always going to be fourth. But, for me, the top spots right now, I think Tampa Bay, given their success over the years, obviously they did not win the division last year, but they seem to be the team that is probably the best bet to win the division again this year, given their success in recent years. And then Carolina coming off the year where they were able to sort of snatch the division crown, in part thanks to the Atlanta Falcons. I feel like the Panthers deserve some benefit of the doubt, and I would probably put them too.
Great stuff, man. Thank you so much for the time. Greatly appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
All right, there he goes. Aaron Freeman, Locked On Falcons on the Brian Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We get you 3 things on a Thursday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan Call.
Training camp report.
This report is brought to you statewide by Safe Lot Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. One of the key returners is Ohio State starting center Carson Hinsman. He talks about the development of the line as well as quarterback Julian Sand has been noticeable.
So he's going to hate me. So we were looking at progress pictures. Anyway, I looked like you picked me up from a shack off the road. I was 255 pounds, all skin and bones. I had a gross looking chin strap. My beard isn't much better. But, Jules looked like a little French girl. I was oh, my God. You know what I mean? And the way he's developed, not only his body, is completely different. Completely different. That dude can roll now. When he's talking in the huddle, the confidence he has, when he's being able to, zip that ball, you can hear it, literally whistle behind your ear. And it gives us confidence to have a quarterback who can go out there and be have a little bit of swagger about him. I was mentioning on the radio a couple days ago, not fake confidence when the noise gets loud and it's a big moment, but he's got some stuff to him, you know what I mean? And so it's cool to have that kind of confidence, not only from your OC, but from a quarterback that you would love to play for.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, five-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Light Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
This is the Ohio State Sports Network, presented by the Ohio State Wexner Medical Center,
the team physicians for Ohio State Athletics.
More from Ohio State returning center Carson Hinsman. He says he and his offensive line teammates are motivated about what didn't go well in the last 2 games of last season.
Yeah, especially together. Obviously coming off what we didn't want to show this last season at the end right there. And I think that just kind of tempers a group. You know what I mean? I've watched a lot of Forge and Fire where they keep tempering the blades and stuff like that. And so it's kind of similar where, like, we, you know, kind of go into those hot, you know, hot crucible moments, kind of burn out some imperfections, you know, strengthen our grit and stuff like that. And so when we come back right now, we can have those abilities to go and play like those tough games like that and be able to produce.
Season starts September 5th against Ball State. This is Paul Keels on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
The new All-Pro
to sail Buckeye Nation. Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeyes sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Hi, Bank, what are we on the poll today?
We are efforting the poll as we speak, and it is... Should Ohio State and Michigan have a color-on-color uniform game? 71.8% say yes, and I don't know who the psychos are saying no.
I think it's a no-brainer. I think you probably have the best chance ever to do it right now because Kyle Whittingham's an adult and a normal human who you can have a dialogue with, like if you wanted to do it. I just don't know if either one of those coaches are ever going to have it on something that's like, oh, yeah, we got to do this. Like, this is something that would have to happen at the athletic director level to make something like this happen, to say, hey, let's do this. We did this before. I bet it would look cool. Let's do it. The only thing that I can't stand is, and I know some of them are actually pretty cool. I did not like when he wore the one-offs for the Michigan game, and we have some legendary wins like Curtis Samuel and a cannonball helmet. Like, those do look cool to me. They just shouldn't have been worn in the Michigan. Not in that game. That game, you should look how you need to look. And I feel that way about they're all blue too. I can't stand that unitard look they have.
Bo, we got gray back on the sleeves. This is next.
One thing at a time. We got major victory, 20 years in the makings. So we'll see what we can do on this front as well. This will be our next task. Let's get to three things on a Thursday.
One, two, three
things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me. I saw yesterday Kim Kardashian is producing a reality TV series called Baseball Moms. So it's baseball moms in Arizona as they navigate the incredibly lucrative and high-pressure world of youth sports, which is all true and quite honestly pretty gross. This makes my skin crawl. But I'm going to tell you something. They could have done something worse, because if you think sports moms are a problem, I'll say hold my beer. Sports dads are a much bigger problem. And my experience is just because I have boys. I obviously don't have girls, so maybe it's different on that side. But I'm going to tell you, sports dads, way bigger issue than sports moms. Way bigger.
I always just lump them into one. Sports parents are just so bad.
Delusional.
So it sounds like Davison Igbinosin is having a pretty darn good camp his first year with the Buffalo Bills. And they're saying his physicality is just changing things on the back end. And this is something why I always loved Davison Igbinosin. I always thought he would be a better pro pro cornerback than one in college, because I think a lot of those PIs he got in college, he won't get in the pros. Those guys play a little more physical. And I never understood how much he took from Buckeye fans on those pass interferences, because I think Davison Igbinosin has more to do with the performance of the Ohio State defense the past 3 years than maybe anyone else, because he came in here and he changed the mindset, it seemed like, with the Buckeye defense. Made them tougher, them more physical. I am rooting for him and the Buffalo Bills.
I love that one, Bake. I'm going to make this my first thing as well, because when Igbinosun was getting ready for the draft, the one player that he reminded me so much of that flashed very early on, and Browns fans will know this very well, is Martin Emerson Jr. The very first preseason game, I saw Martin Emerson Jr. just being extremely physical with all of the wide receivers. I was like, oh, that guy's, he's going to be a stud for us. And then Igbinosun, the entire season last year, he was just giving me those vibes of just a tenacious cornerback. I think he translates well to the pros. I love that pickup for the Bills.
Number two for me, I'm just going to read this. It's an actual report from Rob Reinhart. Breaking, the U.S. Department of Justice has launched an investigation into Major League Baseball insider Jeff Passan's coverage of the L.A. Dodgers. I'm told Passan has been aware of the Dodgers' financial fraud for years, but has failed to report it to the authorities. Now the DOJ is looking to file charges of misprison of a felony against Passan. Sources say that a monetary payoff by the Dodgers has been in play to keep Passan silent. What the what?
What? Isn't that what some of these people are paid to do, is know these things? And
good grief. What is going on? What are we doing?
Goodness gracious. Second thing for me, I've seen a lot of people post this. At first, I thought maybe it was AI, so maybe it's actually true. Oof. But supposedly, they are preparing for the Robot Olympics over in Beijing, China. Mm. Is this a real thing?
I don't know. I can't.
Well, regardless, there's a video going around of a robot running full steam, like a 100-meter dash. And then the robot doesn't stop, though, and runs right into the padded wall that's about 20 yards past the finish line, and it immediately falls and breaks in half. Yeah, let's make all the cars self-driving, though.
Jeez.
Second thing for me, get ready because Rothman and Ice is coming up, and they have the debut at 2:30 of Steel Chambers on the show for the first time ever, so make sure you tune in for them.
Well, that'll be exciting. Very good to look forward to there. Number three for me, final for me, NBC makes his high school official debut tonight on the gridiron.
Let's go.
Good luck to all the freshmen out there playing your first games tonight and then the big varsity games tomorrow. And there are some varsity games tonight, too, so away we go.
Final thing for me, I saw this. The Raiders, who are hosting Super Bowl 63, they're looking for a $158 million improvement on Allegiant Stadium. And most importantly, it's north entrance. They're asking for like $75 million of taxpayer money. Didn't you just build this stadium and open it in 2020? And didn't the whole city pay for all of it?
Yep.
What are we doing here?
Awful.
Final thing for me, the past couple weeks or so, I've been seeing more movies in theaters than I have in probably years combined. And I've been eating it up. My brother's got me back into going to the movie theater. If you aren't going to your local movie theater and you're sitting at home watching it and streaming, you got to go back to the movie theater. Support the movie theaters around. It's freaking awesome. I hadn't done it in forever. I love it now.
Real movement. I think a lot of people are doing that now. It's been a really good summer at the box office. Rothman and Ice coming up next. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends right here on the